We are recording, everyone, just so you know.
Good evening, everyone. We're going to start tonight's city council meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Queeteck.
Present.
Ms. Leonard.
Present.
Ms. Leal.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Salam.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Moving on to the approval of the minutes for the November 5th, 2025 city council meeting. Any comments on the minutes? The minutes stand approved. We're going to start with public comment. Our first public comment, as is custom, is for anything that's not being voted on this evening. There is a 5-minute time limit. I ask everyone to be mindful of, as we have a dozen individuals signed up to speak tonight. So I'll go through the list, and then I'll open it up to anyone else present who wants to make comment. So we will start, again, this is for anything that's not being voted on tonight. The first person I've signed up, David Rupp. And when you come up, if you don't mind giving your name for the record for our city clerk.
My name is David Roof. How are you, Jeff? That's okay. City resident. I ride before you tonight to give you a little historical perspective. I'm a 35-year veteran of the Bethlehem Fire Department. I got on 1976. We had 116 firefighters at that time. A lot less now. I won't talk about numbers all that much. I do want you to realize the city, I have to tell you the city has grown by leaps and bounds. And I think the JPC said we should be up around 80,000 people by the end of this year, which is a far cry from when I got on. I think we were at 71,000. What I want to talk about, you'll hear numbers, I'm sure, tonight, but what I want to talk about is the things that you don't see, that aren't, the numbers don't tell you. And those things are when a firefighter responds to a fire call. When he responds to that fire call, he doesn't know what he's going to run into. And I can still remember my first fire fatality. I can remember a 2.5-year-old child. Markline Village. I've lived with that that was almost 50 years. We don't forget that stuff, and it works on us. We always stop and think, what could I have done differently? Well, if I only had a few more guys, if I only did this, if I only did that, you're second-guessing all the time. And over the years, that plays on a firefighter's mind. And there's no way for me to express that to you unless you lived it. These gentlemen behind me know exactly what I'm talking about. We know every fire fatality we had. I can list them for you, but I don't want to bore you. I was the first officer on the scene at the Hotel Bethlehem fire. We almost lost two firefighters that day, because the smoke was so intense and it banked down. They ran out of air, and if it wasn't free for their pass alarms, we found them and drug them out. If not, we would have had two firefighter deaths. Westgate Fire, we were involved in moving an aerial because of the extent of the fire. Within 3 minutes after we moved that aerial, the whole back wall of the mall collapsed. You would have had three more firefighter deaths. It's only by God's grace that we're here, that I'm here speaking with you today. I could go on, but I don't want to waste anyone's time. I did speak earlier about our population, our numbers. I know this is my third time, I think, speaking before council. And if I'm not mistaken, the last one was in the late 80s when city council got what they called the Gray Study. And the basic premise of that study was, let's see what we can do with the fire department without raising dollars, without it costing dollars. And what did we wound up doing? We wound up losing a 100-foot aerial and two fire stations. That was the city's answer. This is wrong. It's got to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is John Roof.
My name is Jonathan Roof. Following my father like I have in my career. I got on the job 35 years after he got on the job. When I first got hired on, we had 116 firefighters. So in the past 15 years, our numbers have dropped below that. We've lost another fire station. We were told that an engine wouldn't be browned out, that engine 7 is basically a reserve engine. In the years that Company 7 went away, you probably count on one hand how many times the engine's actually been in service and was actually able to be manned. We've always been asked to do more with less. It's tough to stand up here. I hate public speaking. I was raised in Bethlehem. I spent most of my adult life in one uniform or another. I served our country in the United States Navy, and now I serve this great city. By our numbers being where they are, you elected officials have a responsibility to the Commonwealth for their safety, for their protection. Don't tie our hands from us doing our jobs. More people means faster reaction. The more available firefighters we have, the quicker we can stop something. The faster we get to your mother, to your father, to your grandchildren, to your children. And yes, you're right. Every death that we've been a part of weighs on you. I've had to work on a 6-week-old child that we didn't know that he was gone. And we did not stop until we found out later that was because Dad rolled over top. But we didn't stop, all the way to the hospital. I went to Calypso Elementary School, Itchman Middle School, Libby High School grad 96. I wrestled same at West Bethlehem with Mr. Evans here, Mr. Callahan, we've known y'all. This city is everything to the guys behind me that serve it. And we want to do it to the best that we can. So we're not asking much. We're just asking you to step up and protect the city the way that you guys were elected to do. It's great that we have all these festivals come in, bringing millions of people outside. It's great that our city is as beautiful as it is. But during those times, our call volume goes up, our manpower stays the same. We run and run and run. It's great that we have all this revitalization to our main street. We're on TV, you know, during the holidays. We are Main Street America. We're tasked with protecting the people that come and visit and the ones that live here. We don't judge one way or the other. We have a job, and we're there. So help us help everybody else. That's all.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker is Lou Jimenez.
Hi, Lou Jimenez, 625 PA Avenue. Good evening, everybody. I'm Lou Jimenez. I'm president of Local 735. I'm a fire lieutenant, a lifelong Bethlehem resident, and someone who spent his entire adult life serving his country and his city. I stand before you tonight not out of ego, not out of politics, but out of responsibility. A responsibility to my members sitting back there, to this community, and to the oath I swore the day I became a firefighter. For years, you've heard it before, years, not weeks, not months, but years, we've been operating in a staffing crisis. Our department is serving a city that has seen tremendous growth. More development, more housing, more people, and there's more need. Yet we're doing it with less staffing than we had 30 years ago. When Bethlehem looked very different from the city we see today. You heard me say it repeatedly. This is a public safety crisis. And public safety is not optional. It is not optional, I'll say it again. It's the backbone of any thriving community. And the backbone of that safety is the firefighters who respond 24/7, without hesitation, and far too often without enough support. We operate with staffing levels that simply do not match the size, the complexity, and the growth of modern Bethlehem. We're budgeted for 104 firefighters, numbers from the Bethlehem Steel era, not a 2025 city. The last time our department saw staffing this low, I wasn't even born yet. I don't believe anyone in this room can honestly say Bethlehem looks like it did 50 years ago, or even 15 years ago. Our members respond to fires, medical emergencies, hazmat incidents, crashes, technical rescues, overdoses, building collapses, all while trying to uphold adequate staffing. But we cannot meet those standards without staffing necessary to do the job. I want to make it very clear. Staffing is not a luxury, it's a necessity. Adequate staffing determines how quickly a fire gets under control, whether a trapped victim gets rescued in time or not. It determines when a firefighter becomes a survivor or a statistic. Our residents, your residents, deserve better than that. We deserve better staffing, not held together by overtime or forced overtime, and exhausted firefighters who love this city but continue to do the job. This isn't new information. For years, administrations have acknowledged their staffing challenges but have not acted to fix them. Every study, every GIS map, every response time analysis paints the same picture. Our city's grown, but our fire department has shrunk. Which brings me to the current efficiency study. The criteria of this study was said that was agreed upon by Local 735. That is not true. Let me be very honest. This study is not designed, and I'm talking about the city's proposal for a study. That study is not designed to enhance staffing. It's not aimed at bringing us closer to compliance. It is not focused on improving safety for residents or firefighters. This study is meant to determine how to do more with less, yet again. How to stretch a limited workforce even further. You cannot stretch safety, and you absolutely cannot stretch a fire response that already arrives thin. Bringing our staffing back to 113 firefighters, the staffing level Bethlehem maintained for years, is not an extravagant request. It is the baseline, the minimum necessary to begin correcting decades of erosion. And at first and foremost, staffing at Northwest Station out on Catasauqua Road with a company officer, not January 1st, but right now. It's a start, but it's not the final answer. It's a start that shows the city is ready to make public safety a priority. To our residents here tonight and watching from home, you deserve a fire department that's fully staffed, fully capable, and fully supported. You deserve that. No one is expected to protect 2025 Bethlehem with 1970s numbers. To council, we're not here complaining. We're here advocating for you, for your families, for every neighborhood in this city we love. My children live here. My grandchildren live here. My son's on a job. My roots from Marvin Village to the south side, and my loyalty has only ever been to this community. I want my community to be loyal to me. I want the city to be loyal to me and my membership. Tonight's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to move Bethlehem forward, to start rebuilding a department that has given everything to this city without fail year after year.
Mr. Jimenez, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Your decision tonight will determine the level of protection we receive. Choose to strengthen Bethlehem. Choose to invest in safety and bring us back closer to that 113 we deserve and build from there.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Our next speaker signed up tonight is Lewis Jimenez.
Hello, my name is Rosemary Jimenez. I am the wife of Lieutenant Lou Jimenez, and who's also the president of Local 735. I have sat back and watched my husband and the firefighters that are sitting right behind me of the city work tirelessly without the staffing and resources they need to serve and protect this community for too long. The time for polite warnings has long since passed. Bethlehem's fire staffing crisis is not a misunderstanding, and it is not a matter of interpretation. It is a failure of priorities. And the data compiled by one of the most respected fire service organizations in the world, the International Association of Firefighters, proves it. For years, this city has pushed the narrative of doing more with less. But let's call that what it really is, doing less with less, and asking our firefighters to absorb the consequences. Bethlehem spends only 10% of its city budget on fire protection, the lowest of any comparable Pennsylvania city. And because of that underfunding, huge sections of the city cannot receive a fire unit within the national recognized 4-minute standard. For medium hazard structures such as our schools, the apartments that you see getting built all over this city, and commercial buildings, this department means recommended staffing levels at 0% of the time. District 9 is operating without a full-time company officer and cannot meet the basic two-in, two-out safety rule. And for the typical house fire, Bethlehem meets national standing benchmarks only 6% of the time. These numbers are not minor gaps. They are systematic failures created by staffing decisions, budget decisions, and years of ignoring data that has now become impossible to dismiss. You are failing this community. You're failing the firefighters who have sworn to protect this city, and you are failing us, the families. This city is growing, buildings are taller, calls are up, populations are denser, yet staffing is stuck at 18 firefighters per shift, down from 22, while the city removes positions and left vacancies open to cover budget shortfalls. This isn't efficiency. This isn't fiscal responsibility. That is risk, manufactured by policy choices and placed directly on the shoulders of our residents and our firefighters. If nothing changes, it is not a question of whether a preventable tragedy will occur. It is a question of when. And when it does, the reasons will be obvious, because the warnings are right in front of you right now. I'd like to close by speaking not as a firefighter, not as a union member, but as the wife of someone who runs into danger when everyone else is running out of it. Every shift, I watch my husband leave our home, not knowing what he'll face or how thin his crew will be stretched. I see the exhaustion after back-to-back calls, the worry in his eyes when he tells me they had fewer firefighters on scene than they needed, and the quiet moments when he tries with all his might not to let the weight of this job spill over into our family. And I'm telling you this because behind every firefighter is a family living with that uncertainty. We do our best to be brave, but the truth is the fear of losing one of our firefighters is real. Not just for our spouses or parents or children, but for this entire city. If Bethlehem were to lose a firefighter because we failed to staff adequately, the devastation would be immeasurable. A hole would tear through our department, through our families, and through our community in a way that could never be repaired. These men and women are not just employees. They are coaches, neighbors, mentors, volunteers. They are the people who show up at 3 a.m. without hesitation when one of your families needs help. And all they ask is that when they need backup, when someone's life depends on seconds, that the city has provided enough firefighters to answer that call safely. I love my husband, our kids love him, our grandchildren love him, and our family, like so many others, trust that when he steps into danger, he has the staffing, support, and resources to make it back home. This isn't about politics, this is about real people, your residents, your firefighters, their families, your communities. We cannot wait for a tragedy to justify what we already know needs to be done. Please choose safety, choose prevention, choose protect the people who protect all of us. That's all we ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. The next speaker is Jack Massu. Apologies if I mispronounced that.
Good evening. My name is Jack Meshi. I am a proud member of the 735 trustee on the Lee Platoon. I don't know how to follow up with the man and his family is grieving, but I did prepare a speech. I want to talk to you about what goes unnoticed, yet absolutely critical in the moments of when our community needs it the most, is a fully staffed fire department. When an emergency happens, like a house fire, medical crisis, a car accident, a chemical spill, seconds make the difference between life and death. A fire can double in size every minute. A person in cardiac arrest needs CPR and defibrillation within minutes to survive. When that call comes in, our firefighters do not have the luxury of waiting for reinforcements because we are the reinforcements. A fully staffed fire department ensures that when the alarm rings, enough trained professional arrive quickly and together. Firefighting is not one person job or a two person job anymore. It requires a coordinated team who can search buildings, operate hose line, ventilate smoke, provide medical care, and protect each other while we do it. Understaffed crews cannot safely perform these tasks, which means slower rescues, greater risk to the public, and a greater danger to firefighters themselves. But the most important is goes beyond the emergencies. The fire department is the backbone of community safety. They conduct inspections, teach fire prevention, respond to medical calls, support disaster responses, and often are the first faces people see when they're in their vulnerable moments. When staffing is stretched thin, these preventative and community-focused services are the first to suffer, leading to more emergencies in the long run. Fully staffed, our fire department is not an expense. It is an investment in saving lives. And I'm going to read that again. It is an investment in saving lives. In property protection and faster recovery after disasters, and in the peace of mind that comes knowing when the help is truly when they call, firefighters stand ready 24 hours a day to protect this community which we serve. The least we can do is make sure that they have the staffing and support they need to do the job effectively and safely. Our community deserves reliable emergency responses. Our firefighters deserve coworkers, not an empty seat next to them on the truck. Together, we have the power to make sure that when the next alarm sounds, the team responding is strong, prepared, and complete. That is my speech. But I also like to say that I'm a new member to the department, and you can clearly see that firefighting is in our blood. We have senior members who are veterans, and then we have all these guys back here who've been on this department for years fighting for it. And I plan on doing the same thing that they're doing for the next 20 years. This is where I'm going to stay. This is where I'm going to work. This is going to be my home. And I want to be able to spend that time with my kids and this department and do it safely and effectively. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker signed up is Robert, I believe it's Imboden.
Good evening. My name is Robert Imboden. I'm a member of Local 735. I'm one of our vice presidents. I've been a member of this department for about 15 years. I just want to throw a couple numbers out here and some information so that we can realize what it is that's actually going on. We like to make decisions based on fact and data. Look back at the census of the city of Bethlehem's population runs about 74,000, almost 75. And if you believe the numbers, closer to 2025, they want to say our numbers are around 78, 79,000. The problem with that is not only do we provide services for those numbers or those people that live here all the time, a large portion of the services that we provide are for the transient populations, people coming into the city for events, to the casinos, to the college students, to the staff members at these institutions, that number is astronomically larger than this 78,000 number that we might go by, or as some of our other members stated, at about 80,000. So let's be realistic. This number isn't realistic. With that being said, I'm going to hit the same note as one of our other speakers did. City administration has touted how it has one of the smallest workforces in the history of the city. Firefighting is a manpower-heavy occupation and industry. Our GIS study that we've given to the safety committee spells that out. Across the United States and across this Commonwealth, it's unsurmountable evidence that shows that the less firefighters we have, the less abilities we have to do our job. Part of the reason we're sitting where we are right now is because our previous administrations in this fire department, along with the city, felt that it was okay to not hire for 5 years. Five straight years of retirements or attrition, we didn't hire. Please tell me where that makes sense and why we let that happen. As an e-board member, we've been told by the mayor that he goes to his subject matter experts in the respective departments to ask to see what it is that we need to run our departments, i.e. our chief and our deputy chief. That doesn't feel like it's actually happening here. If that was the case, we would see things happening differently. We'd get better answers than we do. We have less firefighters now than we did when I got hired in 2011. Please tell me again how that makes sense. We have less firefighters now than we did 50 years ago, as brother retired Dave Roof, one of our veterans, said at the safety committee that we had a couple weeks ago, meeting here in the Rotunda. We've had more mandations just in this last year alone than I've had in my entire career of almost 15 years. Let me tell you how that affects the department and our ability to do our job. That is going to lead to burnout. And if you don't want to know what that is, please stop by any of our stations and we can sit there and show you on our members' face what that looks like and how that affects us. On top of that, it also leads to overall poor morale. Now, we're not going to come here and complain, but I will tell you this. I'm also a service member. I'm a veteran of OIF, and I will tell you this. Any good leader that I ever stepped in front of is going to ask a couple questions when they come into a new position of command, and that is, how is the morale, okay? If you want an effective workforce and you want an effective body to do their job, morale is your number one thing. Not having enough firefighters to do our job is only going to make this idea, this fact, go downward. We continue to have smaller and smaller turnouts year after year when it comes to hirings. I would like City Council and some of our other committees to address that and why that is. Because we don't have these turnouts, we don't have more people to get hired or put in these seats that we need to have happen. Once again, we're constantly asked to do more and more and more with less and less and less. I'm not the only one who's going to say that tonight, so I'm not going to keep going on it. But I will tell you this. Municipalities around Pennsylvania, since I've been on this job and before, along with other municipalities in the United States, that have made appropriate staffing changes have only happened as a result as firefighters losing their lives in the line of duty. Is that where you want to be? Any of you city council members or the city's administrations want to sit here and answer to the public as why you did or didn't do what you were supposed to do? Don't be part of the problem. Help be part of the solution. We are here to work in a common goal as a local with the city, with manpower and staffing to go forward to make this better. We know that changes can't happen overnight, but we don't have that direction. We need that direction. We need your help to go in that direction. Another thing I want to point out is to understand our budgets. We look at these line items. I think we, our city council and members of these departments, need to really understand what this means. I'm going to ask this question. I want you to think about this. Understand your budgets better and ask yourself why when you see a line item. Why is our overtime budget in 2025 $500,000 and then also the same number in 2026 $500,000? Our overtime budget from 2025 was spent by April, May's time frame of that year. Please tell me why we haven't even considered the difference in our raises that we get into that overtime budget as far as staffing is concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Mboda. I'm going to ask you to wrap it up, please.
In conclusion, we can do better. We want to do better. We're asking you to do better. I don't think that's a lot. If we don't do better, it's going to eventually end up losing somebody's, if not a firefighter's, life, and then we're going to have to figure out how we're going to deal with that. Please help us move forward. Thank you. Sir.
Here is Artie Curtola.
Hi, I'm Marty Caratola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. In relation to the government shutdown, should us taxpayers be paying for attorneys in Congress to give raises to elected officials when the Veterans Administration don't have taxes paying for attorneys to give raises and pay to military officials and military personnel? Two, should full-time elected officials continue to be paid more out of our tax dollars than military personnel, police, and firefighters? Three, should federal grants be given to so-called nonprofit organizations who are making a lot of money, like ArtsQuest in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Four, should we be giving aid to countries who support or condone, by not trying to stop groups like Zionists who kill innocent people, especially women and children, and domestic animals and wildlife? That's pretty much all I have to say, except for one thing. Our parking authority is not really a parking authority. Not when we have so much problems with parking. Why don't they go ahead? Why don't you city council people get the parking authority to go ahead and put lines, because to go ahead that if they're past that line about a half a foot or below or half it behind it, they get a ticket. And people, this way there'll be more parking. Is it because they can't afford to paint? Because elected officials are getting paid so much money? Come on, get this thing together. We have a problem with parking, make it designated spots. If they're passed over that, then they get tickets. Hey, the parking authority makes more money, so does the city. Let's start working right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caratola. Next person signed up, Mike Smith.
Good evening. My name is Mike Smith. I live at 2045 Montgomery Street, Bethlehem. Tough act to follow that, though. I started on the fire department in 1984, and I hung around until 2010. I retired as an assistant chief. On my way through the ranks, I was also president of Local 735, proudly. Back in my day, we went through the same thing. The city paid tens of thousands of dollars to have Mr. Gay do a study, page for page. He was also doing the same study of Buffalo, New York. Page 7, here's Buffalo. Page 7, here's Bethlehem. Everything was identical. You threw your money out the door. The International Association of Firefighters did one of their first GIS studies, and things got temporarily better. Our manning got up to 22 men. Let me explain one thing. You see all the nice fire apparatus you got in the stations? I don't know if you ever go there and look at it. It's beautiful. But you gotta have somebody to run it. You can't send two guys on a piece of apparatus and hope for the best. Your 100-foot aerial ladder, it probably takes three guys to set it up, let alone somebody to operate it and use it. There's just not the people. You have to have properly manned and staffed apparatus and properly staffed platoons working on duty. You can't depend on somebody else coming from East Jupip at 2 o'clock in the morning. They may or may not show up. When I was an assistant chief, and I'm sure Dave could tell this, if you had to go, God forbid, to multiple alarms, it was like, where the hell did everybody go? What do you mean you're calling from home? That's going to be hours. You have seconds, minutes. Time is of the essence in this game. And I want to impress that upon you. Sometimes when you got nothing to do, go to the firehouses and look at that apparatus. Count the seats in it. Like, the manufacturer put all those seats not for everybody to go to a parade. To be, they're supposed to be used. Somebody's supposed to be there to do something. One of the other things I noticed since the last time, 20 years ago, that I addressed this, you guys are paying attention pretty well, but Mr. Evans, I don't know you from the man in the moon, and I'm sure you don't know me. But the whole time I noticed you're diddly-dooting rooting, I hope you're saying, writing down how you're going to hire more guys soon and cross-staffing. But, you know, that makes me nuts when I see the administration just, everybody's, look at Jeff. Well, have a study. When I call 911, I don't want you to do a study. I want somebody there right freaking now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Well, this is on an entirely different subject, but with support for the firefighters. I'm coming to you tonight to highlight and offer my thanks for the city's composting and recycling facilities and the leaf collection on our city streets. The facilities offer convenient places for citizens to responsibly get rid of some types of household and yard waste, and offers free compost at the yard waste facility. The compost and recycling centers are easily accessible and are staffed by friendly people who are willing to help. I'm hoping someone will pass along my appreciation to facility crews for their kind and courteous service, and also to the crews who pick up the leaves on the city streets. This joint effort encourages responsible environmental citizenship and models positive collaborative civic relationships. Inspired by this season's focus on Thanksgiving, I'd like to also thank the council for your hard work, for your respect for the concern of our citizens, and for your leadership, all of which keeps Bethlehem smoothly running and a really good place to live. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Ms. Heckrack. Our next speaker is Ann Smith Reiser. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ann Smith Reiser. I live in the city of Bethlehem. Oh. Ann Smith Reiser. I live in the city of Bethlehem, a few blocks away from here. And I am here tonight in support of the fire department as well. My brother-in-law retired this year, long-time firefighter, and I had heard from years about firefighting in the city. I grew up here, lived away from a long time, came back to the city, and really started paying attention to, how long does it take to get to me? How long does it take to get here? And then asking him a lot of questions. And then when this study came out for the IAF, I was like, wow. That's not good. And it's, when you looked at that study and it said that Bethlehem and all the Pennsylvania rankings are so low, it's really not about rankings. It's about the safety of our firefighters and the safety of everybody in the city and them being able to get where they need to go. In my professional life, I work in the area of environment, health, and safety. I work a lot with people doing safety management systems, industry is always part of the analysis, and when you look at what you're doing, the risk management is off the charts. You have a very high level of risk, and you need to bring that risk down. And I did look again at some of the vision statements of the city and what the city is saying, and when the mayor says that the backbone of the city is, public safety, and we look forward to making even more investments in the coming year, well, that's great, but it really needs to start now. You're down quite a few people, and you really need to start that now. So I just urge the city council to amend the budget and more, so we can start moving towards properly staffing of the fire department. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Mark Will Weber.
Mark Weber, 66 West Elizabeth Avenue. I'm going to talk about water, of course, but I do want to acknowledge the fire guys here. 1984, had a fire at my house, and the irony was I was over in Fountain Hill playing poker with an off-duty fireman, Carlos Sanchez. I don't know if any of you guys work with him. but he was a beauty. But, and near the end of the game, Carlos jumps up and says, "There's fire on the north side. I got to go right away." And he takes off, and 5 minutes later, I get home to find Carlos at my house with a bunch of firefighters putting out the fire, rescued my wife. And so 30, I think that's like, oh man, how many years? It's a long time ago. Yeah, 41 years later, I'd like to thank what a great job those guys did, because my life would certainly be dramatically different had Bethlehem firefighters not really, hadn't been on the job like they were. And in fact, I heard later, I don't know if it's true, but that they used the fire at my house in training segments with young firefighters because they did everything exactly right. And so I had some minor damage to my back room and the downstairs and some smoke damage, but 10 minutes late and it would have been a whole another deal. All right, let me switch quickly to water. If we go back 8 days when Mr. Boscola was up here pontificating and showing me his charts and such, one chart that I found conspicuous by its absence was I didn't see a chart on how much money they're bringing in on the new smart meters already, or maybe anticipated when they get all 37,000 smart meters in, because they got to be making some money from that. But I didn't see a chart or a figure on that. So, Council, you certainly should inquire about that, I think, down the road. The other thing with the whole thing that was going on with the charts is, we learned some historical facts, how much water Bethlehem Steel used in 1970, and that's all good. But going forward, he also was greasing the skids for another rate hike. And I'm here to say again, without those downloadable apps where the citizen can measure their water by the hour, it would be a big mistake to fire in another rate hike. It's just going to put the lower income people, especially in this city, in danger of getting one of these unpayable bills and ending up on their payment plan. Okay? I don't see a payment plan for people that are already precariously close to falling into the abyss of poverty as a solution. That's like salt in the wound is what that is. So these apps would keep people off these payment plans. I don't care if it's 24 people or 36 people or 5 people. Imagine the humiliation of going on this payment plan just to pay your water bill. But the apps, these hourly apps, would head a lot of those off at the pass. So you would keep people off that, which I think is a good thing. That's not a solution to any long-term thing with water to put people on these payment plans. They're probably just one other disaster away from ending up on the towpath with a tarp. So again, that's something to take into consideration for those people at the low end. Again, at the end of the day, I just want to see Bethlehem people get treated the way they are in these other cities, whether it's Naperville, Illinois, or Texarkana, Texas, Yakima, Washington, Paducah, Kentucky. These people all have these downloadable apps. We should have them. And I'm not going to let go of that issue until we get them. I would like to see council make any future rate hikes contingent on them coming through with this app. Hazleton, Pennsylvania, for God's sakes, has it. And it's not exactly, it's a city, I can't disparage if my wife's from there, but it's a city that's kind of struggling. But they have iron water for their people. So certainly, Bosco and the boys can match their counterparts in these cities, right, Ed? You would think. Thanks.
Our next speaker this evening is Anthony Castillo.
Anthony Castillo, C-A-S-T-I-L-L-O, lifetime Bethlehem resident, and tonight I stand with the Bethlehem Fire Department. I remember when I was about 15, 16 years old, a firehouse closed down, and my mom was extremely concerned. You know, and as a teenager, you're not really thinking about that kind of stuff, you know. But now as a father, to hear these men talk about staff shortages and firehouses that aren't properly staffed is very disappointing. And as a father and as a resident, I feel cheated, to be honest. These guys tell you all these numbers, and I'm sure you guys know about it now because they've been sharing it with the residents everywhere. And I thank you guys for that. So as we hear these numbers, what are you guys doing? From my perspective, it's just being negligent. From my perspective, you guys are just being negligent. Because if these guys are coming to you with these numbers, you got men that served 30 plus years ago telling you that the numbers were up here and now they're down here, population's up here. That's negligent. Plain and simple. You guys sit up there in your suits and ties. If something happened to one of these guys because they're operating understaffed, you guys are going to be the first ones going up to their families, shaking their hands. All right?
Yep.
First ones. But you guys actually have the power to do something. So don't stand up there talking about public safety is an important matter for you. Right now, that's just lip service. You guys have the power to actually do something. Do it.
That exhausts our list of who had signed up in advance of the meeting or before we started. So I'll go around the room. Again, we're on anything that's not being voted on this evening. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment who hasn't had a chance? Sir?
Council members, Mr. Mayor, I appreciate your time. I'm Joe Hart from 2220 Cherokee Street in Bethlehem. I'd like you to think about something. If I could have your attention, please. I'd like you to think about something. When you need help, when I need help as a citizen, I count on these guys. When they need help, they're all they have. If these gentlemen get in trouble on a fire scene, and I've been there, I served my community as a volunteer fireman for 37 years. I've been trapped in a burning building. I know what it feels like. One of the reasons I'm standing here today is because the next engine happened to arrive on scene just as I needed that help. And that happened within the first 3 minutes of that call I was on. If that happens to these guys out in the northwest corner of the city or deep in the south side, that help can be 7 or 8 minutes away. We count on them. They count on each other. We all have to count on you. Don't wait until something happens where we have the flags at half-mast and you're sitting there saying, maybe we should do something. The time to do something is before that happens. Let's get it done. Thank you.
So, anyone else who wants to make a comment? Hasn't had a chance. I turn to the wide center. I'll start in the front. Mr. Antalik.
Stephen Antalik, 77 Ridge. I'm in shock. I can't believe what I heard this evening. Incredible. This doesn't happen in Bethlehem. I can't believe what I've heard. I believe in them. They're decent, honest people. They're not being heard. Why? The word on the street is majority of council is an extension of City Hall. And they're not being heard. So someone should be answering them loud and clear. It should be you. You're quiet, as the gentleman said. You're not doing your job because you're an extension of the administration. I'm in shock. I really am. And for these serious speakers who are giving data, which was shocking to me, they're being told they're violating a 5-minute rule. That's insulting. You need to hear it. You don't want to hear it because you don't like bad news. I've sat here years ago where someone speaking about Meridian history was allowed to go double their time on that stupid clock. That's hypocrisy. That's hypocrisy. You should be outraged from what they have told you, but you're sitting there quietly. Just, and many of you are not even paying attention, looking aside and writing. It's daunting. You were put there by them to be their spokesperson. You have failed them seriously. This is on your conscience as a collective body. Do your job. I shouldn't be saying this. Unfortunately, the mayor's not here. You should be all over the mayor if these people are correct. But you can't be all over him because you're an extension of City Hall. You're not citizens' advocates. If you were, they wouldn't be here. They're here because they need you, and you have failed them. Capital F. My God, these are decent people. I can't believe this. I really can't. I mean, I've been to city council meetings going way back. This would have never happened when council was an advocate for the citizens. What are you going to do when you address the mayor based upon what these people have told you? I would like to hear that.
Thank you, Mr. Mattel.
Bill Shire, 1890 Eaton Avenue. It would seem that the authorized strength of the fire department should be increased by about 10% from 104 to around 115 at a minimum. I feel almost apologetic wanting to talk now about the year 1775. However, some of us are watching the American Revolution this week, and I just happened to be reading a book with that title by Kevin Phillips, and at one point he's talking about the various colonies And he's got two paragraphs on Pennsylvania, which I found to be very interesting. This was the year before the Declaration of Independence. Pennsylvania, was fast growing and prosperous. 3 decades of heavy emigration from Europe had made it the second most populous province, displacing Massachusetts, which in Virginia was still number one. It had the biggest city, burgeoning Philadelphia, the colony's most central location, and the largest population of several swing ethnic and religious groups, Scotch-Irish, Germans, Quakers, Presbyterians, and Lutherans, and later on he does mention Moravians. If this religious diversity reflected the province's tolerance, it also generated many divisions, which were not conducive to bold politics. Philadelphia was also British North America's center of relative sophistication in matters philosophical, cultural, and scientific. Also, having been established by royal grant only in 1683, Pennsylvania lagged the independent thinking of the colonies a generation or two older. A further reluctance mirrored the colony's heritage of pacifist-minded Quakerism, on top of which local politics during the 1760s were kept parochial by fierce infighting over whether to continue proprietary government under the Penn family or become a royal colony. These distractions squelched rather than encouraged the larger debate developing in New England, Virginia, and South Carolina. I'll stop there. I'll have more another time, but couple of other comments the author has made. The 4 most radical colonies were the 3 just mentioned, plus Connecticut. Connecticut was something else. They actually had settlers in northeastern Pennsylvania, and they were calling it New Connecticut, and they didn't get their way. But I highly recommend the series that is being shown this week. At the end of 1775, the British had no control whatsoever over any colony when they vacated Boston. However, as you may know, they returned in 1776 with 30,000 regular troops, including Hessians, landed in Long Island, chased George Washington out of New York all the way across New Jersey to Pennsylvania. Things looked pretty bad. And then he realized he was going to lose, maybe half of his army by December 31st because their enlistments were up. He needed to do something before then. And that's when, as I've told you before, he sent an express rider to Bethlehem to Dr. Benedict, something like that, to come join the army and bring 2 assistants because there was going to be work for him to do in Trenton. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Anyone else in the wide center who wants to make a comment? Sir, here to the left.
Thank you for hearing me. My name is Frank Hostetter, 641 Franklin Street, Bethlehem. I've only been a resident 12 years, and I'm not a member of the fire department, but these guys are my family, okay? And as I'm a retired Air Force guy, I said, wear a uniform, but I'm not a fireman. But I've experienced the death and the things that can happen to the community. And what these guys do can't even be measured by your pencils on paper and what's going on. It's time to take this serious. I don't know how we can see. I heard the word hypocrisy. I've heard words in here that it's an embarrassment. I'm not a lifetime resident of Bethlehem, but I've lived here 12 years. I want to survive here. If the fire call goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, I want an adequate supplied force of men to show and women to show up and save lives. That's what this is about. This isn't about some politics or some banner or some poster or some festival. This is about human life and dignity in a city. And I don't know about y'all, but I don't like being at the bottom of the chart. Okay? I hear we're the low 6%. That's not a good place to be. All right? Take care of the people of this community. Thanks for listening to me.
Hello everyone, Joe Daniels, 829 Broadway. Most of you know my history with the city of Bethlehem for the
people that?
Don't. My father was a fireman for the city for, I believe, 33 years before he retired in the late 90s. So this is something that is near and dear to my heart. It incenses me that we are at this point, to be honest with you. Now, my understanding is that this started an administration or two ago, but it's persisted throughout this administration. Bethlehem, this beautiful city that we live in, UNESCO Heritage Ground Site, number one Main Street hotel, Hotel Bethlehem, number one historic hotel, number one Main Street, safest city in Pennsylvania, which we're not, by the way, we're not even in the top 10. But this is making us even less safe. We have a crew of great people behind us that do things that you nor I could never. They run into burning buildings to save life and property. At no point in time in any budget history should first responders' budgets be cut. We are in a city that has been growing leaps and bounds for years now, more recent since COVID. According to my research, upwards of 5,000 new residents since 2020. Multiple new residential buildings, multiple commercial buildings, housing thousands of new people that live in these residential buildings, new people that work in these commercial buildings. Healthcare has taken over, so they're popping up new buildings all over the place. And we don't have the emergency service backing to support it in the event of a serious emergency. So we have 510 flats, that fire. Seven other stations outside of the city of Bethlehem came to help, thank God. We have that type of camaraderie with our surrounding cities and townships. Had it been something in the middle of the night, the outcome would have been way different than what it was. Way different. So I'm asking you guys, you have to put yourselves in these people's shoes, and you have to think, if I have a fire at my house, what's gonna happen? What's gonna happen? I had fire in my fireplace. It wasn't a fire, but it was in my fireplace. These guys, because I was scared out of my mind, there's embers floating out of my rooftop, I have people coming to my house, my roof is gonna catch on fire. This was in the winter of 2021. I don't know if any of you were at my house. I was scared to death. And these gentlemen not only came in and put the fire out, they set up new smoke alarms in every doggone room in the house. Awesome. For Bethlehem and for us to sit up here and say all the great things about our city, and there are a lot of great things about our city. We've come a long way. This is not one of those great things. There is no reason why our fire department should be understaffed. And I would love to know why staffing wasn't increased from year to year. What exactly prevented that from happening? What was spent in lieu of these salaries? What was so important that we couldn't pay to hire more fire people? So that's a question I have that I would like to get answered at some point. But in the meantime, guys, seriously, this has got to come to an end. It's got to stop, and it's got to stop here. The budget, as big as that book is, we got to go through it and see what can be removed to get these staffing levels up to where they need to be. These guys are working overtime in a job where they shouldn't be working overtime. So they're working 12-hour shifts and then having to pull another, I don't know, 6-8 hours. A fire call comes in, they're exhausted, mentally and physically exhausted, but yet we're expecting them to go out and do their job at 100% capabilities, and that's just not possible. It's not possible. And then the numbers, $500,000 for overtime, for last year, same thing for this year, but it's spent within the first three, 4 months of the year. The math isn't mathing in a number of areas. So we need to really sit down, take a real hard look at the budget, see what we can finagle, move around, and get these guys the staffing that they need, the tools, the resources. And I'm not just talking for the fire department. They're here. They know they will always have my support, along with the police department and EMS. Safety of our residents should come before development and everything else.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the Wild Center? Sir, the flyers, please.
Good evening. Ralph Wiggum, 2620 Lafayette Avenue. I am a retired career firefighter from a different jurisdiction, and where I came from, we had minimum staffing levels of four in an engine company, four in a truck company. How these guys are doing what they do with two guys on an engine, three guys on a truck, or three on an engine, two on a truck, whatever, I don't understand it. I can't comprehend it. I can't comprehend how these guys aren't getting hurt left and right. Why aren't more of these guys ending up in a hospital with these staffing levels? This is unacceptable. It's completely, totally, and wholly unacceptable. I remember the days when I would be working an overnight shift, getting up in the morning, only to be told by one of the chiefs or the captain, hey, so-and-so isn't coming in today. We need overtime. You want to volunteer? No, I don't want to volunteer. I want to go home today. It's my kid's birthday party. Well, no, sorry. Nobody else volunteered, so you're forced. These guys are getting forced left and right. They're exhausted. They are tired. They need staffing to augment their force. They need the proper staffing levels. As others have said, they're working with staffing levels down here from the 1950s when they should be up here. How these guys do it, I don't know. My hat is off to them. On a parting note, I really don't want to ever have to put on my dress uniform to come to a funeral here in the city. Please don't ever make me do that. Give these guys what they need. And I will end by saying that while they're upset with the city, there's one thing that they're not going to do. They are never going to turn their backs on you. Ever. Please don't turn your backs on them. Give them what they need. Thank you.
Anyone else in the Wide Center who hasn't had a chance to speak, who wanted to? Is there anyone to the right? Ma'am?
My name is Carol Anders, 1126 Maple Street here in the city. I have been a resident of the city for almost 76 years. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but I just wanted to say I agree with everything that was said back here. I was in a position, my father was a police officer a year before I was born. My ex-husband was a police officer, and although our marriage didn't work out, he was still the father of my two children, so I did worry about him. And now my son is on the fire department. And all the worry that I have had almost my entire life seems it could be so easily rectified if people I'm looking at right now would please do your job, make sure that they get, this department gets what they need. So take a little bit of weight off the family's shoulders. I can't help them, but you can help me and their families. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else to the right who wants to make a comment? Another quick scan around the room. I don't want to miss anybody. All right, thank you, everyone. That concludes our first public comment. We are going to move on to the second public comment. This would be for anything that we're voting on this evening, so any resolution or ordinance that's on the agenda. We didn't have anyone sign up in advance, so I'll go around the room again. Is there anyone to the left who wants to may comment on anything on the agenda tonight? Anyone in the Wide Center who has made comment on anything on the agenda tonight? Anyone to the right? Okay, thank you, everyone. Continue on with our agenda. Old business. Any old business for members of council? No old business. We're going to move on to new business. I have a couple general announcements before I open it up to the floor of council. So, as we know, we're in budget season. We'll have the first reading of the 2026 budget ordinances later tonight in this agenda. That'll fall under new ordinances. Council has had two budget hearings already, one on November 10th and one on November 12th. And then the remaining budget calendar is as follows, just for everyone's knowledge. So Thursday, two nights from now at 6 p.m., here we'll have our third budget hearing. The agenda for the third budget hearing includes community and economic development, community development block grant funds, the police department budget, and the fire department budget will be reviewed Thursday at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. Then we do have our final budget meeting. This would be if any amendments are proposed. That would be for Thursday, December 4th, again at 6 p.m. here in Town Hall. That meeting will only happen if there are amendments proposed. Should we have to postpone Thursday's meeting for inclement weather, which I don't believe we're going to have to, Monday, November 24th is reserved as a backup meeting, just should we have to make up any meetings. And then the second reading of the budget and the adoption of the 2026 budget will be on Tuesday, December 16th, our second council meeting of December, the last council meeting of the year, and that's at 7 p.m. So at the second second council meeting of December will be the final vote on the budget, and then if anyone proposes any amendments to the budget, we'll have a budget meeting strictly to review those amendments for Thursday, December 4th at 6 p.m. Now, I will circulate a memo, as is custom. Everything outlined is our typical procedure, but I just want to remind everybody that following Thursday's meeting, Friday morning, Mr. Miller, our clerk, will send out a memo, but I'll just remind everyone as we gather here tonight that we do have a deadline to submit proposed amendments to the budget. So I'm going to ask that those are submitted a week from today. That would be noon on Tuesday, November 25th, to the clerks, and that would be for any amendments to the administration's proposed budget. So if you have anything already in mind, you can work with Mr. Miller, you can work with Ms. Stewart here to start getting any of that together. And then if anything's proposed, we'll have that meeting on December 4th. Just a reminder, as it relates to voting on potential budget amendments, this is per third class city optional charter law, that any additions to the budget, so if we want to add any expenditures, that requires 5 votes, but to delete anything from the budget, that requires 4 votes. So adding anything to the budget needs the support of 5 council members. Removing anything from the budget requires the support of at least 4 council members. And if anyone has any questions about that, you could ask tonight, or of course follow up with me, Ms. Stewart, Mr. Miller, at any point as we progress along from now until Thursday's meeting and next Tuesday's deadline to submit any amendments to the budget. I just want to make sure I went through everything. Councilwoman, do you have a question?
I do have a question about that, but also, are we starting new business now?
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
So I didn't have anything else to announce, but yep. Yeah, well, you have the floor.
So my question regarding what you just read was, if you introduce an amendment to add money to the budget, is it incumbent on you and expected that you would include in that amendment where the funding would come from, since we do have a balanced budget?
That would be correct. If you're going to add an expenditure, you have to, the budget has to be balanced. So if you're going to say, I want to increase this line item, then we have to decrease the line item.
When we say we,
or whoever's introducing the amendment.
The person who's introducing the amendment. Correct. Because it wouldn't be assumed that somebody else would be looking for the savings, unless people wanted to work together or in some way.
But whoever's I would say it's incumbent on whoever's proposing the amendment to do the work, use their resources to identify whether it's going to be the general fund
a general fund expenditure, if we're increasing a line item, or are we decreasing the line item to balance that out?
Thank you. So I'm glad that a lot of you have stayed. So I'm Hillary. I haven't met most of you. I wanted to, first of all, tell you that I know that there are some people who think that when I'm writing that I'm not listening. I'm actually taking copious notes. So I have Mr. Roofs, lots of your information, Mr. Jimenez, Ms. Jimenez, and her very moving remarks. I pay a lot of attention. It just so happens that I happen to write down what I'm listening to. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that I was absolutely listening to you, and I appreciate you coming out tonight. Mr. Evans, I have a few questions. Also, Chief, you might end up being part of that as well. So first of all, I just want to make sure we're not cutting our first responders' budgets in any way this year, correct?
No, there are significant increases in police, fire, and EMS spending.
Okay, thank you.
2026.
And so in the last 4 years, can you tell me how we've done it? I know that we've been down. How many firefighters have we hired? And taking into account, obviously, the attrition, the retirements, and all of that, but how many have we actually managed to place? Chief is getting to the microphone. So.
I don't have the numbers with me. We sent city counties at 15, and then 2023, 12 this year.
I'm sorry, it was in the last 3 years?
Since we
including those who graduated last Thursday, 35 firefighters in the last 3 years.
Thanks. And how many have we lost to retirement and attrition and things?
At least 35, yeah. Possibly 36, because there's one spot we haven't been able to fill.
Okay, so obviously there's a challenge in getting up to our full complement.
Yes, retirements have been taking place at a much faster rate than we were able to hire and fill the positions for a while. That is correct.
And then we added a second academy. Mr. Evans, can you share how much we did that midstream during the budget last year, didn't we? After the budget had been approved, so
yes.
We did it as an extra expenditure.
There was an expenditure. We came to council for a transfer mid last year to be proactive and bring back as many as we could at the time. The issue with placing Fires Academy that runs in Allentown begins in January. It's 6 months in length. So unlike other areas, you might be able to hire and onboard them rather quickly. There's a delay in both application process, which is significant. And then the academy, which is also quite lengthy. So each and every time we'll lead up to it, work closely with human resources as well as the police chief to make sure we have a full count exactly to the budget amount. And anyone that leaves, we account for that, and that position is filled and sent to the next available academy. The issue of 20 years ago, there was a spike in hiring that leads to 20 years later, that same spike is going to occur. Again, based on not everyone that starts leaves at the same time, based on their family conditions. They may have kids, they may like working, they may want to leave working, whatever it is. So it's staggered. There's no, like any of us, there's not a requirement to live. So there's a drop program. Some people, for example, there's a drop retirement that's scheduled for March 1st. So we have that one filled. It's on the academy in January.
One person who's on the drop?
One person will be at March 1st, yeah. So the seven that we have selected to go to the academy in January includes that position. So it's already being filled before the positions actually vacated. So we look through that each and every time, and I want to give Chief Griffin lots of credit, because at the time he was a training captain, spent a lot of time under very short time constraints in order to prep that summer academy, because that was something we hadn't done before. We had to vet Harrisburg Community College itself as an academy. Allentown has always been very good, it's very reputable to send people out there. At a distance, at a place we're not familiar, it took quite a bit of investigation to do that and then to oversee it during that time. But it was successful. We brought a number of cadets back from that, and then we did the two again this year. This year, Allentown had a summer. It's not guaranteed Allentown will have one every summer. It did last summer. We used it. Those three of the four, one was injured. So the one that was injured, three graduated, one more returned to the academy, prorated in the spring, and joined that class of seven. For a class of eight, in an attempt to keep it at the full budgeted force.
Okay. And so I'm sorry, I forget. Do you remember how much that was in the budget?
It's approximately $20,000 per cadet. For example, this year we have budgeted up to 15 is in the 2026 budget. And that's the total of it is $300,000. That's tuition, the equipment that they will need, including when they return the bunker gear, and everything that will go on to make sure that's prepared to enter the force when they get started. So it's a $20,000 investment each one.
So we're expecting to put 15 people through, 15 cadets through, hopefully.
The funding's there for it, and if, you know, if the positions are open, we'll make sure that that's there. Again, the 8 are there to do it, to bring the full force. That's a plan that's in the budget right now. If there are more that would retire between now and then, if there's a summer academy, whether we explore Harrisburg again, if Allentown offers it, that's the decision we make as we move along.
So that brings me to another question, which is about being the full complement. So if we get those 8 in, then we're at our full, what we have at funding level. So just understanding that that still sets us, according to the IAFF study, that sets us below what maybe we should be shooting for, aspirationally to be at a better staffing rate.
I think there's always going to be a lot of opinions about what that number is, and that's the magic question. That's why we are looking to, and we have initiated an objective study and it's something we haven't deviated. It's a plan we talked about with the IFF multiple times with the mayor in his conference room. I was there, Chief Reich was there until Chief Griffin started. He attended, as well as Deputy Chief Bear was in attendance, our Director of Human Resources, Michelle Sahaki, as well as a number of members of the IFF, and it has been the plan and the discussion that a study, the last one I've seen was 1995, and the commitment was made to the mayor, and that was the agreement that we were going to initiate the study at the cost of what it may take to do a comprehensive fire and EMS. The fire department's made between the fire bureau and the EMS bureau, right? There's synergies between the two with regard to site location, and that the study itself is quite comprehensive, that it does include the apparatus, which we feel we are the best equipped. And we'll talk about a lot of this on Thursday night. We're getting a little bit ahead of some of the things here tonight, because this is a Thursday night discussion, really. That's when what the hearing is for. But we made a, what was my point to? The study itself is going to include everything from the apparatus to the maintenance of the equipment on the apparatus, to the site location, to scheduling, to response times. Okay, so it is going to be something that will cover all facets, and that's something we've also been consistent. We're not going to make decisions without that. That was always part of the plan. We're going to do a full comprehensive study to make a decision about how many, where they might be. We can't talk, the study that we heard about a little bit tonight came out on very short notice, within 18 hours or so of the announce of it was available and it was going to be a public safety meeting. It was a day before the budget hearing, so we could not even attend. We had no chance to be there for that meeting itself. So until we have even a chance to look at it as well as a study, there may be some matches of what we're talking about. There may be some parts of where we digress, but then we made to decisions among the fire administration as well as the mayor to make decisions on how we're going to move forward based on the metrics and the data that comes back from that study as well.
So I know that, again, I know this is a Thursday night discussion, but as you know, this place is pretty empty during the budget hearings themselves. I think we can all agree that it's kind of sad to come in here to talk to the administration about the budget and not see everybody show up and pay attention then. So I just have one question more, I think, that is budget related, but I still want to ask it tonight, so please bear with me. Are we keeping positions open to balance the city's budget?
No, we fill it each and every time. We've always been clear on that. And also the comments on overtime. Salaries and overtime work inversely. We budget that every position is filled. That's the way we put our budget across all departments, what we do. We're not going to assume people are quitting or leaving, or they might. So each position is filled. And down to the point of it knows when they're taking steps. Each of the union contracts have steps. Our budgeting module will calculate when that step, who gets it. Some of them are up their top, they don't get it. But if they're getting one, that's put into there. So that salary line, which you can see on Thursday night, appears in 4001. Overtime's 4003. Overtime, that's plenty what's in there if all the positions are full. If their people do leave, and again, they can retire when they want to, and if they retire, that salaries line goes down, and that's why the overtime doesn't even, because there's an inverse correlation. Salaries will go down, and that would cause overtime to go up. So the funding, and you'll see that in the budget as well, but the, between the salaries and the overtime, I think it's a $300,000 increase from 25 to 26. It's enough to cover both. We don't have cost overruns. We don't hold out positions. We don't have budget shortfalls on that. I think we're budgeted appropriately, and some of the things you see Thursday nights, we continue to make a large investment in all three of our public safety sectors, police, fire, and EMS is quite large. We're quite proud of it, and I think we think it should be too for the amount of money that the taxpayers are placing both in capital, but way more than capital is the personnel, the investment in our staff.
Thank you. And I would just, my own editorial comment is my privilege here in this seat, is to say that I've been proud to vote for the budgets and the increases in the salaries through the collective bargaining agreement year after year that I've been here. One year that included our need to raise revenue and increase our taxes here in the city. Made the decision to vote for that. That increased our paramedic complement and of course included the 3 or 4% salary increase for our firefighters so that they could continue to be compensated fairly in accordance with their collective bargaining agreement. And I think it's important to note that that's a commitment that all but one of the council members that year made. One of them chose not to fund that those positions and not to make the hard choice to ensure that we were fully paying our firefighters and our police officers and increasing our EMS complement. Thank you, Mr. President.
Any other new business from members of council? Councilwoman Ramsey Smith.
First, I'll start off that the Finance Committee will meet on Tuesday, December 2nd, 2025 at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. The 2024 city audit will be reviewed. A proposed budget transfer to purchase an additional police vehicle will also be discussed. Grace Cramsey Smith, Chairwoman of the Finance Committee. I just have two questions also regarding the firefighters, Mr. Evans. For the study that's going to be conducted, what standard is going to be used? You know, is it going to be the NFPA, or what is going to be the barometer as far as knowing that we're within the standards that we need to be?
There's multiple standards and we're still working. I'm not prepared to talk about the study in detail this evening. So.
Okay. Is there a reason that the mayor's not here? Do you know? Is there something that is more pertinent than this meeting?
I don't know. No.
Okay. I want to ask, except it just seems like he misses so many meetings. If it was more the exception than the rule, I want to ask, but I feel that it's really important that he should have been here.
I think the mayor has, a large number of public commitments. I think we're all aware of how often the mayor needs to be out into the public as well as attending city council. And he does, I know he does the best to balance his schedule so he can attend both
like
and be
I said,
in
I
three places at once.
It's more the rule than the exception that he's not here under being a mayor, especially when we have so many firefighters here on an important issue. The other issue is, and I'm not sure if you would know or if the fire chief would know, can we give an approximate number of how many people are eligible to retire, like as of today? I mean, I've heard like 25 to 30 possibly are eligible to retire as of today.
I believe the number of 25 would be accurate. That would include a small number of individuals buying back some sick time, but I believe that puts us about a quarter of the way through the department who would be eligible for either early retirement or full retirement at this point.
Okay. And I guess it's difficult probably to foresee who would be eligible to retire next year. Do you have any numbers on that?
Well, by the date of hire, we can tell who's eligible for retirement, but that's a personal decision. We don't have the right to ask those individuals what their intentions are when they plan to retire. Mm-hmm. We and the union have both asked, you know, if people know they're going to leave, to please give the city adequate time to prepare.
Right.
But there's no requirement for that, and we don't have the right to ask them what their personal intentions on retirement are, so it's impossible for me to know that.
Okay. Thank you. I know that's just difficult because we already have 25 that can retire and they all decide to retire, even if we're putting more in the budget for next year, we're still going to be have a shortage in staff.
You're correct. And just because people reach the age where they can retire doesn't mean they're necessarily all going to run out of here at the same time. You know, their family circumstances, like Mr. Evans mentioned, are the variable there. So we really have no way of knowing that.
Okay, certainly. And then the other problem is, you know, once we find out somebody's going to retire, because the academy is only in January, unless there's one at Harrisburg, It could be a year or more until we can replace that person, until somebody can go through the academy. At least 6 months to a year, I would think, right?
You're correct. That depends on when they retire based on the start of the next available fire academy.
Thank you. Which I think is how we got into this situation in the first place, because we had so many retirees and we did not staff the fire department as we needed to in the last, I know, 6 years at least.
Well, the Allentown's the one I said is a maybe. They might do it. They commit. Harrisburg is always in the summer fund, correct, Chief? So that is, if the number's there, if it makes sense, if it's one or, you know, two, it needs to make an administrative decision. Are we saying that many go out and taking out all the administrative supervisors to be involved? So that's a little bit different decision, some of the math that goes into the Harrisburg versus Allentown's much more convenient, much more efficient. But if there's a number open, we will employ that Harrisburg as a new option because it's worked out well.
Right, and that helps because it could end
up
being
yeah.
some time, months and up to a year until we could fill that position, which is really difficult. Okay, thank you. I don't have any more questions. I just wanted to give some comments, and I thank everyone for coming and commenting tonight. There were a lot of great comments. Today in the news in Philadelphia, there was a woman and two children, 5 and 6 years old, that died in a house fire. Firefighters arrived within 4 minutes, which is in the national guidelines, yet they couldn't save the children and their mother. We are not arriving within 4 minutes due to staffing shortages for more than half of the fires that we have to get to. I'm really concerned, God forbid, this tragedy of lost lives, and I don't want that to be on my conscience. Currently, we have less firefighters, as we said, than we did in the 70s, and in those years when Bethlehem Steel was active, they had their own fire department that covered 25% of the city. So currently, our firefighters are covering 25% more land with significantly greater development in apartments, warehouses, and industries throughout the city land. I just don't get the logic in this. Our government's commitment in this city has to be to public safety of residents, businesses, and the many, many visitors that we have. It has to be our primary responsibility, because if we cannot provide public safety, really, what else matters? The firefighter staffing study provides with really vital information and data that paints a scary picture relative to first fire response and safety within our city because of staffing shortages and the fact that we did lose one fire station. The smaller the crew size, naturally, the more tasks that an individual has to complete, which contributes to delays in initiating the fire attack and containing the fire and limiting property damage. Someone had mentioned about the 510 Flats fire, how we had to have 7 neighboring departments respond. And that really raises serious questions about manning levels, which in turn raises questions about the capacity of Bethlehem Fire Department to respond to large fires, and it also weakens those responding companies in their coverage areas. It was also mentioned that the Bethlehem Fire Department is only 10% of the city budget, the lowest of other similar cities in the state. For example, Erie is 23% of the budget, Scranton is 21%, Allentown is 21%. And while we do have additional firefighter positions in the 2026 budget, I will be proposing an amendment to add 4 more firefighters and additionally promoting 4 firefighters to the position of lieutenant so that we can have an officer at engine nine during all the shifts that are necessary. Like I said before, even though we're putting more firefighters in the budget, we still have a significant number of people that are able to retire, more that could retire next year. And I know from talking to the firefighters that the amount of mandatory overtime is really killing them. And many are wanting to retire because they just can't keep up with the overtime. They're losing the quality of life and the time that they should be with their families, in addition to the stress and the adverse effects it has on their health. I really hope that my colleagues on council will concur and support my amendment, and I hope the administration will work with me to find the funds necessary for these positions. But if not, I'll find the funds within the budget. I just want to end with a really quick story. Once there was an 8-year-old girl, and she had to go into a hospital ICU to see her father, who was in an oxygen tent. And back in those days, oxygen tents covered you from your head down to your stomach. He was a first responder and had a really severe heart attack on the job that was life-threatening. That 8-year-old girl did not understand why her daddy was in a tent and why she could not hug or kiss him. She also couldn't understand why her dad and her family's life was forever changed since that day. That little girl was me, and I now understand. I understand that first responders can never guarantee that they will arrive home safely or unharmed. I knew because it happened to my dad. Our life was changed forever, financially, emotionally, and otherwise, and his life was cut short because of the stress of his job. First responders risk their health and their lives every day for us, and we must give them the support and staffing we need. I have another issue to bring up, but I don't know if anybody else wants to talk about first responders since we're on that subject first, and I can wait.
Thank you, Councilwoman. I'll stick to the topic of fire and then come back to you then.
Sounds good.
Mr. Callahan?
Thank you.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank all of you for coming here tonight. I heard you, and I'm sure a few others up here heard you too. Chief, I respect you, and I support you and the guys underneath you 100%. I also understand, you know, I understand that you're in a difficult position because you're the head of the firemen, but you're also part of administration and have to sometimes, for lack of better words, toe the party line, you know. Mr. Evans, before I get into that, so I want to also thank you because I had two fires that affected me in the last 2 years. I have a 7,000 square foot building, three units on Linden Street. Very old building, dry. There was a little oil fire on one of the units, stoves. Like that, it went up the wall. Very dry place. No sprinkler systems, and it's a, you know, it's a 120 year old building. Went up the wall, it was into the wall, in the in back of the hood, you know, the ventilation hood, like that. The tenant ran out, called 911. I got called over there, went over there. You guys, rare like that, got it out. Otherwise, I have three tenants who live upstairs in the upstairs unit. One's a little girl. So I hate to even think of what would happen if there was a delay in you guys getting here, because it could have been very serious. Number two was my son. My son lived on the fifth floor at 510 Flats, literally right underneath the fire. Thank God for the alarm systems and the sprinkler systems, because he was working from home as an engineer, and the alarms went off. He actually thought it was a fire drill, and looked outside, didn't see anything. He called my daughter, who works in 610. What's going on? Nothing. He looked out again, saw people running out of Starbucks. So he went downstairs. It wasn't a city council meeting, but I was in a meeting for city council with some people. I got a phone call that the 510 Flats was on fire, and I got pictures of it with the, you know, the flames shooting up in the air. I lost my wife 19 years ago to cancer. If I would have lost one of my kids, I would have went insane. Jumped up, called. Thank God my son answered the phone immediately. So within 5 seconds of me seeing the pictures, I'm thinking, all right, he's sick. Is Eric out? Yep. Cody out? Yep. Good. Stay here. I'll go in a little bit. So I want to thank you for your service and the professionalism that you show the city on a daily basis. So I thank you for that. Mr. Evans, if we... and maybe this is more for Chief. If we came up with funding for four more firefighters, new funding above and beyond what's already established, do you think there's the ability? And I know there's problems with the fire academy. Do you think there'd be enough people coming through the fire academy to fill those four new positions? If it's council. And if it was the will of council, I'm not saying it's there, but if it was, and we came up for funding for, I don't know exactly where Ms. Grace Cramsey Smith got the numbers, but I would be for that. If council supported adding four more firefighters, do you think that money could be fulfilled by hiring four additional firefighters on top of the current staffing that we already have, and also of the vacancies that we already have?
So we would have very little window to make this happen for the January 15th start of the fire academy, okay? With that being said, there would have to be background checks that had to be finished, and those individuals would have to go for their psychological and mental health evaluations and their physicals before they could receive an offer of employment. we would do everything within our power to make sure that if we were told to hire additional individuals, that we had them ready. But we have a very short window, and we would have to get working on something like that immediately. We had a civil service meeting earlier tonight where the list was certified for the 7 individuals we're going to send to the academy. There is one additional person remaining on that list that was certified. So we would also have an issue where civil service would have to certify the remainder of the list to add additional people. And I don't know, that would be a question for human resources, whether or not that could be accomplished in that timeline.
Mr. Evans, so you were talking about the correlation between the overtime and the salary payrolls.
Yes.
So obviously, if we hired more people, our payroll would go up. And the theory that I think you were trying to explain is payroll goes up because we hire more people. There's a possibility that the overtime then could come down.
Yep. The way the budget is presented, it's assumed that each position is filled. Right, that's our goal, to have every position filled that's budgeted. If people start leaving in March, someone retires on March, not that drop, but one that we don't know about, March 1st leaves, we're not going to be able to act on that until, is it July, when the hack would start?
I would have to check on the start date. It would either be late June or late July.
So there's 4 months of salary that we weren't expecting that would be saved, but this can be used to pay for overtime if that position needs to be backfilled. If it's a day where overtime is used to fill that position for the person who left in between the sessions. So between the two, it's kind of a wash is the way it works. Those two together add up to cover the personnel cost between 4001 and 4003 during the year.
I'm not going to hold you to this number, but I'm just curious, I'm off the top of your head. Best guess.
Yeah.
If we wanted to hire 4 more firefighters, what do you think that would cost with everything, with salary and then benefits and medical?
Could be close to $500,000 because there's academy at $20,000 a head, sending them to the academy, and then there's the salary of a step on. There's fringe benefits we'll have to recalculate. From medical side, yeah, I'd have to run some calculation. I have an understanding of what it would take and go through the budget lines, make sure I'm not missing something. So
right.
I won't want to quote that today.
No, I know. I appreciate it.
But it could be, $500,000.
Right, yeah. So in 2024, 2025, in both those years, we spend $500,000 each in overtime, correct? A little more?
I don't have my information on me now. I don't remember. There's a budget of 500. There's over $1 million, but then, so it's 500 over. The salaries ended up 500 less because of the
right. So it'd be a wash. I mean, if we hire, I'm not saying it's a complete wash, but if we hired 4 more firefighters to help alleviate some of a lot of the overtime that we're currently already paying for, which is already in the budget.
They would have to be there on day one, ready to go. Right now, the crunch is realistically, if a council makes until the vote happens, those cadets would go to their class in July. Yeah. We'd see them in November until they come out. That's part of the problem. It makes it more complex. We can't fire someone up and have them ready by March. Academies are long, and this almost 6 months.
But we would have, if we don't do anything now, though, we'd have the same problem a year from tonight if we had the same discussion. So I understand that there's leeway in ramping up the cadets through the academy, but we're going to have the same problem next year if we don't do something now about it. So to me, it would make more sense to try to find additional funding now in the general fund for 4 additional firefighters. I mean, we don't have a... we don't have an officer at Engine 9 at all.
That's correct. The current situation is the officer that works at a Company 6 on Broad Street is responsible for a district of Company 6 and Company 9.
Listen, we lucked out on that 510 flash fire, because had some of the surrounding communities
had an event going on in their communities at the same time, I'm not sure that we would have got the help. How many other, wasn't there like four other communities, you know, or firefighter units or from the surrounding, you know, communities that came here and helped us out? Was Heller, wasn't Hellertown here? Allentown?
I believe we had seven departments in various capacities that assisted that day, but I'd have to double check that.
Listen, I know every union is always wanting more workers, you know, and more employees, because the we're always being asked to do more with less. But this is at a critical point, I think. I mean, we don't need to, I mean, we're talking earlier about doing a study. Why do we need a study? There's your study. The study showed up tonight and told you what the study's going to say. You know, that's all we do. All we do is spend money on studies and consultants. You know, the mayor gave us a list of consultants. If he would have hired some people, and I'm not going to mention any names, but, you know, obviously, you know, Mr. Antalis is, you know, said that that we're an extension of the administration. I can assure you, Mr. Reynolds is not considering me an extension of the administration. I can guarantee you that. And nor do I want to be an extension of the administration. Our job up here is to ask the tough questions and do the things that need to be done for the city, not just for political terms, you know? So, I don't know. Ms. Cramsey-Smith, I'd love to sit down with you in the next day or two. It obviously has to be done very quickly. If we can find $500,000 somewhere in the budget. If we don't do it now, we're going to be in the same spot next year. And I think everybody on council needs to understand that. Because next year, is the academy at the same time every year?
Twice every year, and it goes back to, again, the number of levels where we retire is we have a track record. I mean, some of the folks here that spoke tonight have been around longer than I've been, but I've been here 16 years, and the last 3 years, it's spiked at least twice what it was to the other, based on the ages that are available to do that. That also comes to an end, but it was not the, if you go back a couple of years ago, it was three, it was zero left. So some years, the reason we send them to the academy is because no one left. That's why if everyone's there and everyone's coming back, are you going to hire more when everyone's there? Not in that year. You're fully funded. The budget's, the money's spent on everyone and everyone's there. It worked out great. But when they start leaving and without knowing, some of them, well, you know, they're right. They leave with maybe a weekend notice that I'm wrapping up. We'll get the notice that they're leaving 3 days from now. That's hard to plan to do that. So the goal, the facts of the situation are that the number of eligible to retire is also going to be reduced, that this issue is not a forever, hasn't always been like this. This is something we started experiencing when that group from 20 years ago that were hired started to enter the same realm. So we're filling them the quickest we can. We fill every single one that leaves. So we fill one for one, but the issue is the timing delay.
Is the, I know there's a ton of restrictions on, and I'm not as well versed in the laws as you are, but the ARPA money, can that money be used for payroll for fire departments or police departments?
What line item? There's not really. It's in 0901. It's in affordable housing. It's in homeless. That's where it's at right now.
It's
in homeless. It's in the
how much money
community recovery fund.
How much money in the budget is towards affordable housing and the homeless shelter?
That was $2 million and for the homeless shelter, but I believe there's plans, which you're going to hear about Thursday night, where that is plans for that funding. And also the other issue is one of our bedrock principles is that we are looking for something. If we're going to add recurring expenses that are going to be here, you're adding something that's going to be gone in 1 year. Here it is fixed, and then that money's gone, and we're imbalanced. Now we have, like with those memos I showed you from 15 years ago in 2010, 2011, as we had issues of doing cash, problems with our bond ratings. When you start trying to do that and take on an initiative without a true recurring funding sourcing, here we got through 2026, because I think one of the worst things that Sea Cities do is, oh, let's do it, and then we'll find the funding later, and it always gets harder, you know, that not easier, to find funding to cover something unless it's a recurring funding revenue or a recurring cut expenses that's not coming back the very following year and we got nowhere. So I think that's one concern I would have.
Well, I agree, and I understand that. I just think that with the timing as it is right now and finding out this information is so close to after the mayor's budget has already been presented, I'm just trying to do a quick fix now so we can come up with the funding now for four officers. And for $500,000, there's got to be somewhere in the general fund that we can come up with $500,000 between the ARPA money, whether we take $100,000 from the affordable housing or $100,000 from the homeless shelter. And I think there's you said there's $2.5 million there total?
Homeless, I believe there's two, if I remember correctly. I don't have my budget book with me tonight. But I think that number was two. Yeah. So we'll see it Thursday night when we're here. You'll see, we'll go through those lines. You'll see what's available from. But again, I would caution that we wouldn't support that because it's just going to put us into a problem. A year from now, you bring these people, and now we have cadets. And
but isn't this a problem now, though? Isn't this a problem now?
You can move in mind now that the academy's in July. So we get back to the timing issue. I don't know what we're solving right now. If you move the money, July is the next academy, so there are some realistic hurdles for us to get to where we need to go to truly come out the backside and have a reasonable, workable, long-term solution. And we're not going to solve anything in January and February other than sending eight cadets to the academy.
Well, I just, you know, between now and the budget hearing for fire and police is what, Thursday?
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday. I would hope that myself and Ms. Cramsey Smith and anybody else here on council that would like to get together and try to find the $200,000 or $300,000 from the general fund. I don't think that's an impossible thing to do. And I loved Ms. Quiatek's comments. It sounds like she's all for supporting the, you know, all of you, and I hope that would include adding four more firefighters or the funding for it. That's all we can do. I can't wave a wand and have four more people come out of the academy. But what we can do right now to help your problem is provide funding for four more firefighters on top of what you already have budgeted. And that's, I think, is it exactly what you need right now? No. But I think it's a start. And if we could do that, and I think it's very possible, if the will's there, if the true will's there, and people aren't just talking, we could find $400,000, $500,000 like that in the general fund. There's going to have to be other areas that get hit. And I don't want to take money from the homeless shelter. I don't want to take money from affordable housing. But if that's where it's got to come from, 200 and 200, I'd be 100% supportive of that. We already have a homeless shelter at the, what church is that on, Bethlehem Housing, or the homeless shelter for the, on Market.
United Church of Christ.
Yes. And they're already providing those services, right? I mean, they have been. So,
that's a complicated discussion. Again, we're going into a different, very different way, but
I'll just there's remind, a lot of moving pieces. Before still yours, Mr. Callahan, by no means am I trying to cut you off.
Right.
But on Thursday, we're reviewing the police budget, the fire department budget, and I know a lot of the members obviously are here today and spoke tonight, and I welcome everyone to come out again Thursday night, 6 p.m., but also the community and economic development budget Thursday, so we'll all have our budget. I don't even have my budget book with me tonight. So just, and I don't mind the entire council as we have these conversations and new business is yours to speak, just there are certain things that I don't want to hear it again on Thursday. What if we don't have the information in front of us? So, you know, if questions could be asked and answered on Thursday, I welcome them being asked on Thursday and given everyone the opportunity to answer them with those materials in front of us.
I agree, and I appreciate those comments. And I don't have my budget book with me you know, either. But that's why I was asking Mr. Evans, you know, I, you know, it's off the top of his head. I have no idea how much four firefighters would cost. And I appreciate you giving us a ballpark figure. I'm not holding you to it. So, but I think if it's really, truly something that if we believe what was said tonight, and I think the date, we don't need a study. The study's right there. So let's find the money for four more firemen. And to try to get our services for the fire department up to where they should be. I mean, not only are we understaffed compared to two comparable cities of our size, but I don't think there's any city our size that has the events that we have. A casino, two universities, Music Fest, Arts Quest, I mean, all the different, Celtic Fest, all the different festivals that we have in this city, and all the tourism that we get during Christmas. There's no city our size that can even come close to the amount of people that come in this city on a regular basis. And we're not just talking about fires, we're talking about car accidents. My daughter had a health event 10 years ago. The fire department got there before EMS. Thank God she made it. So I thank you for coming in. I appreciate the time, Mr. Evans. Thank you, Chief. Thank you. And hopefully by next Thursday or this Thursday, we can sit down and try to find some money for four additional firefighters. And I would hope then that we could probably get, you know, a lieutenant over at Engine 9. Right. So, thank you very much.
You have until next Tuesday to submit amendments. So, don't hold yourself to just Thursday, Mr. Callahan. You got a week to work on it to submit something to Mr. Miller. Any other new business for members of council? As we say on the fire department, Councilwoman Laird.
Thank you. Anecdotally, I am a little surprised. I know that there have been staffing issues for years. I've met with several people over the past couple of years talking about that on the administration and the fire union side. I recall, though, last year being encouraged by, I think it was at our budget meetings, the union representatives and the administrative representatives talking about how well things were going and how there was progress being made in staffing and how things were moving in the right direction and we weren't there yet, but it was going that way. So then when there was the public safety meeting, which I work full-time during the day, I couldn't attend at that time, but I was like, wait, what? And then there's another study, and I'm just gonna say, like, I'm sitting here trying to take it all in from all sides, and I'm a little bit just surprised and confused and trying to understand everything as we move forward. However, moving forward, right? Like, we can't deny data that exists. There's apparently more data coming. I'm not going to ask questions about specific dollars because we do have our hearing on Thursday. I have a few general questions that will, the larger group is here. So the two studies. Why were there two separate studies initiated? And where did the funding for each of those studies come from? And who determined the timing for each of those studies?
I won't speak for the other study. We have not done a study yet that was, I understand, conducted by the labor union, IAFF. So we'll let Mr. Jimenez talk about, well, who funded their study and the motivations behind their study. Are we doing this?
I just want to give Mr. Evans, are you done answering Councilwoman Laird before I...
Well, if my segue may make sense to let Mr. Jimenez talk, and then I'll talk about the one that hasn't happened yet, but...
If you would speak on the one that the union conducted, Mr. Jimenez, please.
Okay, the study, the GIS staffing study, was funded fully by the International Association of Firefighters. That money comes through our union dues and is a service provided to any city within the international. So there was $0 that were paid from the city for that. It was paid out of our union dues. Regarding the timing that the study did come out, the study came out and a meeting was scheduled. That meeting was not done purposely the day before the mayor's budget address. That wasn't a tactic. That was something that just came and we took the opportunity to present the data. Regarding the relationship with fire administration, the relationship with fire administration is good. I mean, we don't always see eye to eye, but we always work together. And I just want that to be known. The disconnect that I see from my side of the aisle is above the fire administration. And that's where we need improvements. I don't know if the disconnect is communication between the union and administration above the fire administration, because I'll definitely go and talk to whoever needs to hear it. But I think they need to listen to their subject matter experts first. And in this case, I'm thinking they're not. That's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. Jimenez.
And then in terms of the other study, yes, thank you for clarifying. And I am glad to hear that there wasn't a shift that I had missed in between the union and the fire administration, at least. But so a second study was initiated that is not just looking at fire, correct?
It's fire. This goes back. It's been a number of months and meeting with the IFF, with the mayor, to talk about the idea the mayor wants to commit to a full, comprehensive, objective study, not run by the labor union, but this will be an objective study, outside source. It's kind of a committee to look at it. And that would be completed before we make decisions on who, where, how many, with regard to both fire and EMS. We'd like more information on response times. And again, we weren't, because of the timing of it, the way it all worked out, and I'm not, you know, throwing any aspirations anyway, but the fact was, it was just impossible for us to be at that meeting. From parts right here, as some of it that came out of the study, where let's the firehouse, Linden and Gep, but there's no profit Linden and Gep. And there's just a lot of answers and questions that come out of that study that we hope our study, the one that we're going to be conducting, will have conclusions that will bring it more clear. Maybe the studies will be complementary in some areas. I imagine they would be divergent in other areas. But this is a study we want to do with the fire administration, the administration itself. We need to understand the cost. Not a lot of costs were also provided during the study. It was this and this, but what does it mean? It has to mean something to taxpayers and council. We need to be able to present, what does this mean? What does it cost? Is it feasible? Is it reasonable? Some of those charts that we looked at in the first study would be very, honestly, very, very difficult when you're talking about tax increases that would require some of that to come to fruition. That's just the reality of it. So what are the creative solutions that we can work on in a number of different ways? And that's what this study is intended to complete. But it's a full, from site to response time, to staffing, scheduling, to equipment, and fire and EMS. As you know now, EMS are located within the firehouses. So it's a different look than it was. I know it happened years ago. It didn't work that well years ago, and it went away. It's back, appears to be working pretty well, but we want to look at that from an outside expert to bring that to us, to bring conclusions that we could then make decisions on.
And the study would or would not include police?
It's not police. No, this is
fire.
This is talks that the mayor and our group had with the IFF specifically, explained this is what we intended to do. Seemed to be quite agreeable at that time. For most of the months, everything was agreeable, understood, and the number of people in the room to witness that fact and how those conversations went, that was agreeable, that this is where we're going with this, and based on this, we're going to be making some decisions.
Sure. Okay, and the timeline for launching the study and getting data back, what is that?
The request was sent out in September. number of proposals were received on October 31st. Interviews will be conducted in, I think, the first week of December. It's right after Thanksgiving, because the Thanksgiving's next week, so the week after that, I think, are some of the interviews to bring some groups in and talk to them to see what they can offer, what their presentations look like. Probably will, because of the timing of that misses council deadline, so that will probably come into council in the form of the 120-105, a consultant needs to be approved by the city council. So the one that's chosen will be brought in January, because it's going to be too late to bring that to you in December 16th, I think, is the last meeting. So if you bring it the first meeting in January, that proposal, if it's voted up, it's approved, we would then move into the contracting phase. We expect this study, we ask for it to complete in 4 to 5 months is the goal, and that's something we'll be talking about as groups come in. There's a lot to it. Some of the groups we expect that are quite capable and have significant bandwidth to come in, and we'll be talking about that. We would like it completed by summertime, so that's the timeline we've been working on all along. And that's where we are right now. We're still on schedule.
So the goal would be to be able to leverage data from the study in next year's budget discussions, but it would not be able to affect anything.
Yeah, the goal is one, right. That presentation and the information of the study would be presented in the summer. And that gives leeway if things do take longer, if there are delays for any reason in any area. We want to be, again, comprehensive. So we're not going to cut corners and rush it, but we believe that time frame fits pretty well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilor, Mr. Jimenez, did you have something you wanted to add to Ms. Lair's question specifically?
I do.
Okay. In regards to the RFP for the city study, we did provide suggestions which we would like to see in the study. The way the RFP was sent out, didn't have a lot of those suggestions. One of those suggestions that is missing is I have it right here. Benchmarking and peer comparison. They did have staffing, GIS staffing in there. I thank you for that. But the evaluation of the relief factor. How many personnel are needed to maintain the minimum staffing and the accounting for leave, training, injury, and special assignments. There was also something left out for an emergency management coordinator. Our fire chief does a job of two, and we would need another member to be downtown to take on things like that. That hasn't been put in there.
Mr. Jimenez, I appreciate the insight, but I thought maybe it was relative to the study that the union had done, not necessarily. I just don't want to engage in a rebuttal for you and Mr. Evans to get into a back and forth here tonight.
When we were talking about the study early on with then Chief Reich, we were under the impression that our suggestions would be taken and put in. Since then, they have not. And also, I have asked for who bid it on the RFP. I have yet to find out. I heard there's six people. I'd like to hear that. Thank you.
Councilwoman.
Thanks. Okay, moving on from the study discussion, thank you both for clarifying your perspective backgrounds on that, respective background. This is probably a chief question. There was some discussion of in the firefighting industry when firefighters are forced to take an overtime shift. They might say, I think somebody gave an anecdote of like, oh, it's my kid's birthday, I don't want the overtime, and they might be told, I think it was a hypothetical, but like they might be told, you have to come in. How often does that happen in our crew, that somebody is forced, truly forced, to come in for overtime?
So within about the last year, it has happened on a somewhat routine basis where individuals have been mandated to stay. The deputy chief and I have worked with the local to come up with a plan to, we signed a memorandum of agreement which took the burden off of the contract. It used to be the least senior person on that shift had to stay and be mandated. Well, we found that that happened to the same individual on a shift almost 6 weeks in a row. So we came up with an agreement to try to lessen that burden, to make it based on seniority, where it would start at the least senior person and work all the way through the department to try to alleviate that. Unfortunately, we still have people getting mandated on a somewhat regular basis. That is factual.
Okay, thank you. And am I correct in understanding that when we look at the budget on Thursday, we are not going to see, there are significant budget increases, I'm aware of. We looked at some of that in the capital plan discussion and everything for fire, EMS, et cetera. Are there any additional positions presently being asked for? Like, not including the amendment that may be coming. Any actual additional seats?
No. The increase, as I referred to it, was, I believe, at $300,000 of salaries, and that's existing staff, cost of living increases, contractual raises. That's what
okay, so people are getting paid more, but it's not more people being sought. And so what is highest level summary? Why not? If we know that, is it that you're waiting for the data? Is it?
Yes.
So you're going to wait another year. Okay. Chief, are you concerned about the staffing in your department this upcoming year?
I have concerns about the amount of overtime that the individuals are working, with it causing burnout that they have approached me about. And I'll be absolutely honest with you. I mean, there's no fire chief in the United States that wouldn't tell you they want more staff.
Sure, okay. I do understand that.
So I'm not going to stand here and say I wouldn't take more staff. But there's a comprehensive plan that is in place. I presented what I presented to the administration. We had our discussions, and this is the plan that came out of it.
Okay. Okay. I'll have, like I said, some more specific questions on Thursday. And I know that Chief Cott for police is not here tonight, and she's out, I think, right now in general, but I think is coming on Thursday.
Just, I believe she's expected, not positive.
Yeah, if she's able to. But in general, you know, we're talking about fire. There's been some discussion of EMS, but we've talked at previous meetings about that police also have some open seats and roles, and so I don't want that to be overlooked in our conversations on Thursday. You know, I will be asking some similar questions just to see where we're at across the board for our first responders. So that's all I have on this topic.
Anyone else? Councilwoman Wilhelm, and then Councilwoman Liam.
Thank you all for coming tonight. I understand it can be nerve-wracking. I've been on that side of the microphone before being on this one. We appreciate your coming to share your thoughts. Unfortunately, I was also unable to attend the public safety committee meeting. As it's been described, it was relatively short notice and in the middle of the day, so I regret that I was unable to be there. Thank you for some information about the study, the studies. I understand better the difference between the two and the timeline. One thing I think I would like to understand better, and I'm not sure whom to ask this question of, but how did IAFF work with the city on the study? What was the, obviously there's a lot of data needed from an administration. How was that data procured? What conversations occurred? What was the partnership in terms of collecting?
I'm aware I'm invited to any discussions or input into their study. The data was provided through our GIS and the RMS system. So provided by the city, the data needed for the calls in order to send it to, I guess it might be DC, but no, we weren't.
Okay.
So did not have any input on that study.
So it's fair to say not primarily, but exclusively pulled from GIS. Then conversely, and you sort of alluded to this, and perhaps because you haven't selected the firm or individuals who will be managing the study, how does the city anticipate working with union members, department members, to collect data and input narratives, anecdotal? I understand if you're not able to predict that, but do you have any sense of what that dynamic might look like?
Yeah, there'd be a component of the perspective that the fire administration is going to lead it. Like, you know, they're the ones that were promoted and chosen for the position to make those decisions. Will there be input from the staff? Yes, there are interviews. Most studies of that nature are going to make trips and visits. They're going to take a look around. They're going to talk to people and get their input. So it's a full, well-rounded study, yes. But
Okay. I'm just curious, in what conditions will individuals, so there will be a human component, I guess, is what you're suggesting, in terms of interviews and some narrative anecdotal data?
Yes.
Okay. Correct. A couple other questions I have are related more to the landscape of fires in Bethlehem, because we're talking a lot about national standards, and I think it's really important for us to understand what's happening in Bethlehem. And we've had an interesting history, and understood things have changed over the years, and we've grown. I think I would like to understand, for a growing city, but in particular for Bethlehem, a city that over the past several decades has grown, how does that balance with improvements in fire suppression, modernization of materials, building code improvements? How does that balance out? Because growth is obviously one very important factor. How does that all work together in general, or how does it work in Bethlehem? What have we had an increase in significant structure fires? How does that work out trend-wise?
So the exact correlation is really hard to pinpoint, okay? We've had massive growth here in the city of Bethlehem. We've had increased calls based on our population. I mean, that's something that no one's going to argue. There have been increases in building materials, but both in a positive and negative way. You know, building materials and systems have come a long way in advancement of life safety. However, a lot of times the contents that's put in those buildings is subpar to what used to be in there many years ago, being that they're made of more flammable and combustible materials. So in a way, with all the advancements in detection and life-saving equipment, it almost sort of balances out with the commodities that are being installed and the lightweight construction that things are being built with.
Okay, so have we seen an increase in significant structure fires?
No large noticeable increase. I mean, our average seems plus or minus a couple fires a year seems to be fairly consistent for us here in the city of Bethlehem.
Okay, but an increase in calls?
Yes, each year, typically, there's an increase in calls of varying natures. We respond to a multitude of different types of calls, not necessarily fires. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, each year, our call volume climbs a little bit each year.
Okay. And I also understand if you don't have this information at your fingertips, we can talk another time. But do you have a sense of what the majority of those calls are regarding?
So the majority of the calls we respond to in the city, mainly the number one calls we're going on are largely EMS calls, automatic fire alarms, motor vehicle accidents, followed by fires. I mean, those I would say in that particular order, that's what the data would back up.
Okay, understood. And would you mind sort of describing, with regard to mutual aid, calling in other departments, how does that work? How is a non-Bethlehem department notified of the need? Is there a significant delay in how quickly they get information? Can you just tell us about that process a little bit?
Sure. Here in the city of Bethlehem, when we request assistance from a mutual aid company, that would go through the Northampton County Communications Center. If we're requesting a company from Northampton County, they would make that notification. If we're requesting resources from the city of Allentown, they would contact Lehigh County Communications, who would therefore dispatch and contact the City of Allentown Fire Department for their response. And contractually speaking, what occurs here in the City of Bethlehem is we request resources from other IAFF career municipal departments before we move on to other resources from other agencies that are not career departments, unless it is for a specific specialty piece of equipment that only that agency can provide.
Understood. Is it possible for you to say sort of a a time delay? Is it, you know, before a needed station is notified? Is it many minutes? Is it?
I can't give an exact time. It's several minutes, but I would have to do research on an exact time of how long it takes to get through the two communication centers for them to be dispatched. That I wouldn't even want to guess and be fair.
I appreciate that. Have we seen an increase in mutual aid?
I don't believe this year has been an increase in mutual aid requests. There seems to be a few requests here and there every year. Sometimes it's for a specific piece of apparatus or equipment that can fill our air cylinders on fire scenes. But also, I don't know offhand how many times we've been to Allentown this year or how many times they've come to us. I would have to research that.
Okay. This is a sort of a granular question. And again, you may not have specific numbers, but just to understand, you know, is it common on a typical shift to not be called out? Do you anticipate, as a firefighter on duty, to be called onto the scene 50% of the time, 80% of your shifts, 20? Do you?
Again, I would have to run reports.
Okay.
But years ago, that was not that uncommon. You could get through a day without going somewhere. Today, by today's standards, that's almost never happens. If it does happen, it's almost never.
Okay. I would love to know a little bit more about that.
I can try to pull some data.
Thank you. And then I think my last question for now is just with regard to the overtime and required overtime, is whether an individual has been out on a call taken into consideration as opposed to, you know, when someone is required to stay for more time, is what they've done in the time they've already been working taken into consideration?
So what they've already done in the time they've been on shift is not taken into consideration. However, we have a 39-hour rule that if the individual has been in service or been on duty for 39 hours, or if that overtime would put them over their 39 hours, that they are excluded from that mandate. We don't want them being there longer than that 39 hours. And what that 39 hours is if you're scheduled to work a night shift, then you're mandated for a day shift, that's a 9-hour shift, and then your 15-hour night shift, you're there for 39 hours.
Okay.
So if an overtime were to occur on what was supposed to be their first day off, they would be excluded and they would be sent home for safety purposes.
Okay, thank you for the information. Reserving any, obviously, budget-related questions for Thursday, but thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Councilwoman Leo.
So I do have a couple of questions. First, I want to start with saying I called the public safety meeting. Nobody told me when or where to call the public safety meeting. I think I was actually advised to give a little bit more time, which hindsight being 2020, I think I would have. My logic and reasoning was we were going into a budget season, and I had known that there was going to be a more comprehensive look at public safety anyway. So I figured more information never hurt anybody. And I thought that council having this information going into the budget season would be helpful for how we would look at the budget, not just this year, but next year, which I believe I said at the public safety meeting that I thought that this would be helpful to inform council about how we would use this information with further information to look at the next budget season. So I just want to be clear that hindsight being 2020, I wouldn't call a budget meeting or a public safety meeting with such short notice. It just seemed, at the time, like not that big of a deal. I feel like it was probably way more of a big deal looking back on it. I want to talk a little bit about numbers. I'm looking back, I can only go to about 2004, seeing 113, 114, like the ebbs and flows of how many people are within the fire department. And it seems like the largest cut was under COVID, which was 2021. Where we went from 110 to 106 firefighters, or 106 people within your department. Thank you. And looking back, the idea was we were cutting these things because of COVID. By we, I don't mean this current council. I was not on that council. But it was because of reduced table games, $1 million drop in EIT, a lack of entertainment tax. It was really just a massive hit due to COVID. And it seems to me that these studies were in order to rectify like these massive hits that we had to take because of like budgetary downfalls within COVID. Is that the general consensus of the administration as well? Like, is there, were there these safety concerns? We're not necessarily safety concerns, but was there this, we looked back at the budget, we made the adjustments that we needed to make, but now going forward, as we stabilize as a city, as the EIT increases, as we have the money to do it, we want to continue to beef up fire department, police, EMS. Is that the point of these studies?
I think it's to give an objective overview from outside the eyes here, to give us comparison benchmarks, comparison to peers, where we stand, where our firehouse is located, are there opportunities, are there efficiencies from that level, from experts in the field, the people that run these studies mostly come from, not mostly, they do come from public safety backgrounds. They have decades of experience in doing it. And so we expect to learn a lot from it, and we want to make decisions based on that versus, you know, but what someone may think, or a small group of people think. This is objective, it's experts, it is data driven, and that's what we want to move forward.
I might be remembering wrong, but I believe that we had increased over time quite substantially because of the fact that we were going to be running because you were going to be running the academy. So we had significantly increased over time because of those gaps that you were talking about, where we were going to be hiring new firefighters, but we couldn't use them. It wasn't that part of the increase of overtime, or am I just remembering one?
Yeah, that wouldn't really have anything to do with academy. It's, you know, it's always the race to get to the next academy, to hire, work on the list, get the list updated. We have that list now that we work through. We work through a decent amount of it to come up with the 7 that would be going to this academy. There'll be 8 total, because again, the one that got injured, 8 in spring. And then the question would be, is there enough? Where does the new testing have to, when you start that process again, to keep that list strong enough that when we get through it, because not everyone makes it through, most, we do find great success that people are offered the positions in Bethlehem, take the position. And people that work in Bethlehem, stay at Bethlehem. So we're lucky, unless they're retiring. Those things are both true, and they're both factual. We can show you numbers for that, that is the case. But it's always a case when they do open, as I said earlier, of getting, it's not that easy to just to plug someone else in. There's a process to go through, even if you have that list, to get them back on the line.
And Chief, this is a question more for you. And I know you weren't the chief at the time, but when the 4 positions were cut, it was like we were going to cut these positions through attrition, and they weren't supposed to take these massive hits on like how many people were per vehicle. If the standard number is 4 per vehicle, are we really going down to like 2 people per apparatus? How do we get to that low?
Yes, and currently engine 9, without an officer, has 2 personnel. Engines, fire engines in the city have 3, and our ladders have 2. Those are our current manning numbers.
Anything else from members of council? Mr. Callahan and then Ms. Grandy Smith.
So, then, Ms. Herbert, when you had said before that the spending, to Ms. Quitek's question, the spending was up for the fire department, when you answered that, was that, are you saying that was just for, it didn't include any additional firefighters, it was just in their negotiated salaries?
Yes.
All right.
Correct.
All right. So, you know, I appreciate you being here and answering the questions. You should not be the one answering the questions. The mayor should be here. And I don't know what's going on, but he's missing a tremendous amount of meetings. I can't imagine that he didn't know that they were going to be coming here tonight. And I can't imagine that there's something more important going on in the city. If he's at some, I don't know, he's at a Cub Scout thing or a Weeblow thing, I don't know. You know, but I can't imagine something more important going on in the city than being here and answering our questions and listening to these people come here tonight explaining about how they're drained. And I think if we look just at what the chief just said, they're mandatory overtime. We know that. That's one item. It was getting so bad, we had to put in a 39-hour maximum work shift, right? So individuals are being asked to work 39 hours straight, and if they do, we got to relieve them so they can go home. Is that correct?
That is correct, but that is not a new rule that was implemented. That has been longstanding.
I know, but that's still astronomical, right? I mean, I'm sure whoever is being forced to do 39 hours would like to go home sometime and spend some time with their kid also, you know, as I'm sure the mayor does, you know? So how much is the study, how much are we spending on the study? We don't know that amount yet, or the RFP hasn't come back yet?
The most of them, I believe, in the area of $60,000 for the study, for a 5-month study. Yeah.
Doesn't the we're spending $500,000 a year in overtime for the last 2 years straight, the forced overtime on people, the people who are manning our fire departments telling us, or telling the chief, who is, I'm sure, telling you that they're stressed out and overworked, and the 39-hour cap has been being reached on a regular basis. Doesn't that tell us already, without having to spend $60,000 on a study, that they're already stressed out and overworked, and that we need more manning? I mean, I don't know why this administration is so consultant happy. I mean, that's all we do is spend money on consultants all the time. And there's the consultants right there. They showed up tonight and told you what. Were any of those questions or suggestions taken into account, questions and suggestions from the union, or was it just done and simply put together? Were there any questions or suggestions from the union that was put in the RFP?
Yes, the proposal that was put out there, there were a number of suggestions that were provided, and some were inserted, some were not. That wasn't theirs, it was our study, so some were not. It's a blend. And also the RFP is different from if you've been through that decision process, when the groups come in that are selected and that even provide the proposals are quite lengthy and detailed, much more than the RFP itself it is. You're looking for an outline, you're looking for them to tell you what they can do based on a number of prerequisites. When it comes back, those proposals are detailed. The interviews that follow that are lengthy, and the decisions are made on that. Yeah.
Why was the RFP presented so late in the year, though? I mean, were you guys aware, or you or the mayor or the chief aware that the understaffing and the amount of overtime and the stress level on?
It's been ongoing. We've been talking about this in these chambers as throughout the last 2 years. When this spike began, we talked about that this was an issue. We're going to continue to send people to the academy best we can. It's going to be a process to work through to get back to where the numbers that they were. They're way above historical numbers if you go back 10, 15 years, not retiring at this rate. So it's incredibly difficult when they retire at that rate to replace them at that rate. So that's what's causing what we're speaking to. Yeah.
So, if I was the head of this or trying to figure this out, I would try to ramp my staffing up over a period of a couple of years. So, in anticipation of the extra retirements, because there's a lot of people retiring, we just can't. I mean, all I'm saying is we can't keep on doing what we're doing. It's not working. The staffing keeps getting lower and lower and lower. Stress level keeps going up, and overtime keeps going up. So I mean, I want to wait until Thursday night, and we'll have some more discussion then, and hopefully we can all decide of how we could come up some money from the general fund. But one last question, and this is just for my own information. If we can't find $400,000 or $500,000 in the general fund for 4 new firefighters, Because if we don't do it now, we're going to be in the same spot next year. If we can't find that in general, how much of a millage rate of an increase would we need to increase it for 400,000 dollars?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can check that.
I'd appreciate that if we could have that. I mean, I'm just curious, because if we can't all agree on cutting the budget to find this $400,000 to find it somewhere in the general fund, then I'd be interested to find out, well, if no one wants to do that, how many of us are willing to increase the millage rate if it's a slight amount? In 10 years on council, I voted one time for a tax increase. I think it was my second year, and you were sitting right next to me. And it was only because we were going to have to cut fire police. Because at that time, we were in, I don't know if there was a recession, I don't know what was going on, but times were tough, and we needed some additional revenue. And it was either cut fire police or raise our taxes and the millage rate a slight amount. And that's the only time I've ever voted to increase our millage rate, ever. And I think if we can't find $400,000 to $500,000, which I think is insanity, if we can't find $400,000 or $500,000 for four new firefighters to alleviate this stress and this pressure valve that they have, then we all need to seriously think about increasing the millage rate slightly. I don't know if it's a quarter point. I don't know what it is, but if you could get that to us. Of how much money would have, what millage rate would have to be increased in order to fund four more firefighters? Thank you.
Councilwoman? Thank you. Okay. I do have two quick questions. I just want to make a statement, first of all. I have the budget book here, and overtime in 2024 was actually $1.2 million, which is really significant. And then in 2025, it was 500,000, but we don't know. That could be higher, I would assume, because we're still in 2025, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any idea what overtime is at this point?
It is on pace to finish under a million or right around a million, so a couple hundred thousand dollars less than last year's
number. Okay, but it could be close to a million.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And then we have a projected for 2025, 500,000. Okay.
Yeah.
And also, we're looking at the salaries come out of the general fund, so that's where we need to find the funds for the salaries, correct?
Yes, general fund.
Correct. Okay. That's all I have regarding the fire, but I have another new business. I don't know if we still.
I just want to give another once over.
Sure.
Anyone else, I think, for the fire department? I just have a couple of quick asks for Thursday. I'm not going to ask you for numbers now, but for Thursday. Just things I think will be relevant to the conversation. When we review the fire budget, Chief, Mr. Evans, if you could bring for the last 3 years, including this year, so 2025, 2024, 2023, the number of calls that the department has responded to for this year to be year to date, along with the top four of each category. I know they're coded when they're dispatched, whether it be an EMS call, a dwelling fire, a fire alarm, whatever it would be. I think that information is relevant. We know how many positions are budgeted for. If you could bring on Thursday, how many, as of current, at present, how many firefighters we have, how many positions we have vacant, how many we're holding open, whether it be someone's on military leave, someone's out on long-term workers' comp, whatever it would be, how many are pending the academy, and they referenced a few that you just had your civil service board meeting, so how many are pending going to the academy, factored into those numbers. The staffing per platoon, we have four platoons, correct?
That is correct.
If you can educate me, and by default everyone else on Thursday, what the staffing is for each of the four platoons, I know we don't have minimum staffing in our contract, but if you're mandating people, then we have a baseline that we operate with, correct to assume?
That's correct. There's a number we really do our best not to go below for safety reasons.
So if you can share that number on Thursday, what it is, what's the floor that you try to run a shift with on Thursday? How many firefighters we know for calendar year 2026 will have met their threshold to be retirement eligible? Like you said, we can't say who's going to retire. Is this the right of everyone? But
how many we know are currently either at and have not submitted their paperwork, or in calendar year 2026 are going to hit their anniversary date that they would be eligible for retirement. I'd like to know for calendar year 2025, how many people left the department voluntarily, not terminated, but how many voluntarily resigned prior to hitting their retirement years? So essentially, who left without being eligible for the pension, if any? So that I would like to know that for 2025, just that helps for me to understand and conceptualize longevity as we talk about filling roster spots. What is a reasonable expectation of how often someone's going to be in that spot as it's relevant to turnover? So you could even include 2025 and 2024 in terms of anyone who voluntarily resigned prior to having their years in for retirement being pension eligible. If you could give me an approximation, if possible, for Thursday, of we will know and we'll discuss what overtime has been here to date, but if we know how much of that has been mandatory overtime or involuntary overtime, I don't know if you have that data available. If you do, if you could give me an approximation, just so we know what we're talking about. And I'd also want to know for calendar year 2025, year to date, and then for 2024, how many call outs for manpower we've had. I'm not talking about mutual aid, but am I wrong in if there's a certain call, we call out individuals from home, firefighters from home, to either staff the stations in case another call comes in, or to assist in responding to that call?
Yes, you're correct. Yeah. If we go third alarm or above, we call personnel off the
line. So if you could just give me for calendar year 2024 and year to date 2025, how many call outs for our own manpower from home have come in?
Yeah. I will do my absolute best to have that data for you in the next 48 hours.
That's all I can ask for. And if there's certain things that need to follow up with me about, later in the week or next week, I understand.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
I was just writing notes as I was hearing everyone talk. I think this is information that for me is relevant, and I hope others can find benefit in that information too.
Mr. President, can I add one item there?
Maybe.
Could we possibly get the current up-to-date overtime as of whenever you do it, whether it's tomorrow or Tuesday, for 2025, the current amount?
Yeah, we have, I believe it's now 24, the 26, payrolls are complete, so we're almost there. Two runs left, so you kind of nailed down.
Yeah, the way that would be run would be for the most recent close of payroll.
Right.
So that's, I think, yeah.
Thank you.
Please.
Yes, sir, we'll do our best.
That's all I can ask for, Chief. Thank you. And again, I know it's a lot, but these are just things that come up as I was hearing everyone's comments tonight. So I know it's a lot to look up, and I'm not going to ask for any of that information tonight. I wouldn't think it'd be fair to even approximate some of that information. I'm going to move on. We're still on new business. Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith.
Thank you. Previously, Councilwoman Van Moore and Negron strongly advocated for a conflict of interest ordinance so to avoid elected officials being influenced by financial contributions. They were specifically concerned about financial contributions by developers within the city, and to that end, Council passed a conflict of interest ordinance in 2022 that states a public official, including members of council, the mayor, and certain other city officials, are required to recuse themselves from votes on matters where they have a financial interest. For campaign contributions, a financial interest is defined as a contribution of $500 or more within 5 years before official action on a subject. If this occurs, the official must recuse himself, explain why at a public meeting, and have it recorded in the meeting minutes. The Pennsylvania Ethics Act also prohibits public officials from engaging in conflict of interest or accepting monetary value, including campaign contributions, if it's understood that their actions will be influenced. Consequently, municipalities should adopt clear conflict of interest policies that outline when officials should recuse themselves from a decision and how to handle potential conflicts. These policies should be enforced consistently to ensure that all officials adhere to the same ethical standards. While I supported this ordinance, and I believe council at the time did not feel there was a need, I have found since that there's a need to further clarify the oversight and enforcement of the said ordinance. For example, while council members can recuse themselves from voting if a conflict exists, how does this apply to other elected officials, specifically the mayor? Our current mayor, as recently as July of this year, took $15,000 in campaign contributions from the owner of Pearl Development, one of the foremost developers in this city.
Additionally, he has received contributions within the past year from other developers as well as consultants. It's vital that financial impropriety or even the appearance of financial impropriety does not exist in government. After all, we've seen what happened in Allentown, and we currently see the devastating effects of this in Washington. Consequently, I'm requesting a legal opinion as to the oversight and enforcement of the Conflict of Interest Ordinance of 2022. I concurrently believe that we need to have a committee meeting to further discuss this matter. As such, I'm making a motion to conduct a committee meeting on the Conflict of Interest Ordinance of 2022 to review the oversight and enforcement of the ordinance and the legal opinion regarding such.
So I just want to restate to make sure I'm understanding clearly.
Certainly.
The motion on the floor is to conduct, for first to have Attorney Stewart give a legal opinion as it relates to enforcement of the Conflict of Interest Ordinance.
Oversight and enforcement.
Oversight,
correct.
And enforcement.
Yes.
And then to have a committee meeting, which committee, Councilwoman?
You know what? I'm going to have to look because it did go to committee during that time, and it, you weren't council. I cannot.
Committee of the whole would be the committee that we typically had. The recent Article 1, the amendments we're voting on tonight, I took to committee of the whole to give everyone a chance to weigh in. So that's the motion on the. So again, just to clarify, are you presenting a date or just a request to schedule a meeting for committee of the whole?
A request to schedule a meeting of the whole.
And to that I would say I don't know if without it, and I'll let Attorney Stewart clarify so that not resistant to it, but could we, I don't know if we need a motion to it, I mean, I'll tell you here as the chair or the president of council, I'd gladly invite Attorney Stewart to issue a legal opinion to full council, and then at the next council meeting when we have, or I don't know how long it's going to take, Attorney Stewart is my point. So if Attorney Stewart can have that issued, then as soon as that's issued, I can have Mr. Miller start polling members of council for dates to have a committee of the whole meeting. I don't want to give any false sense of when that's going to be, because I don't know. I don't know how long this takes to issue an opinion. I know we're a little crunched for time as it relates to the calendar year, so I don't want to say we're going to have it this date or within a certain amount of time. I will say, again, I am of the opinion that I'll let Attorney Stewart kind of weigh in or if she wants to, but that I don't think a motion's necessary other than you have every right to use Attorney Stewart as a resource that she can issue a legal opinion without any action of counsel. So I welcome and invite her to do that. And then once she issues that to counsel, I'm telling you, I'll work with Mr. Miller to start pulling everyone on committee the whole dates. Again, I just, in fairness, don't want to, I mean, even if we were voting on a date, I'm not going to commit to a date without knowing if, you know, what my availability is and that of counsel. But I will say I'm 100% willing to coordinate with Mr. Miller a committee the whole meeting.
Thank you, understood. I would just say that I know our second meeting in December, there's no meetings prior, so that could be an option if it works. I'm just stating that. So I am requesting a legal opinion, which I have the right to do, but now, since I have a motion on the floor, do I need a motion to request the committee of the whole, or is it up to you as the president to decide if we have that meeting?
I'm of the opinion it's up to the chair, who happens to meet me at this time, but I'll let Attorney Stewart say if she agrees with me or not.
I would concur that you do not need to make a motion either to get a legal opinion on this particular issue, nor to schedule request the scheduling of the committee of the whole.
Okay. Thank you. And again, I feel like it's just important because I know Councilwoman Van Wert and the Grown put a lot of time into this, and I was 100% for it, but unfortunately we just didn't add on to what's the oversight and the enforcement of this ordinance. No, I guess we just didn't think that we needed to, but I think that it's important that that's a very vital part of the ordinance. So that's why I'm requesting this.
So that, and then my acknowledgement of your request, and again, I'm more than happy to accommodate however we can, because I don't want to just for the sake of saying, yeah, we're going to have it even before the second meeting in December. I can't say that without us looking at the calendar and everything. But are you willing to rescind your motion given what we just talked about? Because I don't know what we would be voting on. Cause you,
right, because
she's going to do the legal opinion.
Right. And I do not need to motion for a committee the whole meeting, correct? Right. Right, so I will rescind the motion.
Understood.
And I want to just clarify, it's not like I'm looking at oversight and enforcement. Certainly that's important, but we never put in the ordinance. It's clear how this ordinance affects council people, but it doesn't, it's not clear in the ordinance how it affects administration or other elected officials because they do not vote. So what, you know, how does it work if they take over $500? Does that mean that they should not do business with the developer they take the money from? So that's what I'm looking for, an answer in that area.
That's fair. And I'll say I have thoughts, but it would strictly be by memory. And I don't want to, without being confident, share what my recollection is. That's why we have recordings and minutes and such, so we can adequately prepare for a meeting like that. We're still on new business, Mr. Callahan.
It's on the same topic. Did you have the ordinance in front of you?
In front of me? No. Can I pull it up in a moment? Yes.
No, I apologize. I just thought, I'm not putting you on the spot. I just thought you were pulling it up. I was under the impression, and I haven't read it, but I was under the impression that when it was passed that if there is a donation over $500 that the person that did the donating, or the developer or the business that did the donating, was not permitted to do business with the city for 2 years or something like that.
That's not my recollection, but I'll Attorney Stewart. My recollection, and I'll be the first to say I could be remembering incorrectly, was when this topic came up when we voted on it, it was brought up by someone that council was ultimately the ones who vote on everything, and that's why the ordinance applied. I don't want to say exclusively without having the language in front of me, but at least it's the honor system, right? There's no enforcement mechanisms within the ordinance. And then because council were the ones who are actually taking the vote on whatever was on the agenda, that it would be for council to recuse ourselves from. But I could be misremembering.
No,
I don't
want to. That's an accurate statement. I do have it in front of me.
Okay.
And if I can just add that I did highlight that it says financial interest is to find a contribution of $500 within 60 months or 5 years before official action on a subject. And this may be what we need to hammer out. As if this occurs, the official must recuse themselves, explain why, and have it recorded.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we need to delineate. What does that mean? An official recuses himself in what way if they don't vote?
Fair. Attorney Stewart, I should refer his legal opinion.
I understand your question.
Thank you. Thank you.
My question is how would, since the mayor doesn't vote, how would we put any teeth into the amendment if we had to change it, if it was the will of councils to change the amendment or to amend the ordinance? How would it affect him, or not just him, but future mayors?
Them.
I
would say that's a good question for the committee of the whole meeting, Mr. Callahan. That's why we'll let Attorney Stewart issue her legal opinion, as I just shared with Councilwoman Cramsey Smith, and I'll remind full council, Attorney Stewart is the solicitor for all of council. So should anyone want to engage Attorney Stewart prior to any committee of the whole meetings with questions, with wants and wishes, feel free to do so. We're going to vote tonight to amend something that I recognize that all needed to be amended, and we took a committee of the whole, and now it's on the agenda tonight. So there's nothing precluding council from following that same process for anything in the future.
Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Councilman?
Briefly, Mr. Bosco. Mr. Will Lover has recognize tonight's a lengthy one, but again, he's not here to hear his questions be addressed. I'm wondering two things that he raised. Do you anticipate or has there already been any increased revenue based on the switch to smart meters? And the second question while you're coming up is, we learned that you'll be approaching the Utilities Commission about a potential rate increase, as is the legal process. does council, and maybe this is actually a solicitor question, does council actually have the ability to put any contingencies on a utility rate increase? I know that's a very regulated process. So I know the first question is for you.
Okay, so smart meters and revenue. So the answer is no. There's no perceptible increase in revenue with the new meters. The meters, a water meter that was installed in 1990 is about as accurate as a meter that's installed in 2025. So from the standpoint of measuring water consumption, there's no change. And
thank
therefore
you.
there's no marginal increase in revenue.
Thank you.
If you recall the one graph I showed, we talked about presentations, we've shown very flat consumption over the past 15 plus years.
Right. Thank you.
And the other question was about
if the council even has the ability to put a contingency, like we will approve your rate increase if you do X, Y, Z other thing. I was under the impression it's a very regulated process to increase utility rates. And if that answer isn't available tonight, that's fine. It just
because there's a bifurcated rate structure with water, because the PUC, Pennsylvania Utility Commission, governs the rate structure for customers outside the city of Bethlehem. That rate case is outside the purview of the city council. It goes to Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission. Rates inside the city obviously are set by ordinance by the council. And historically, we keep rates the same to in the interest of fairness to all our customers.
So right.
Typically we apply for PUC, because we're not going to know what the rate increase is going to be when you apply to the PUC. You're going to wait. You wait until they make a decision. That decision is going to be whatever it is, X percent. And then we come to the council and say, okay, here's our proposal to increase rates on the customers inside the city to the same rate that the customers outside the city.
Right. My question was not so much about the rate itself, but does council have the power to say, for the one that we do vote on inside the city, to say, this rate is approved contingent on X additional service being offered to the consumers within the city.
I just thinking out loud, I think council can do whatever they wish within the confines of passing an ordinance. If you look at the water rate ordinance, without getting too much into the weeds, I think it's basically at the wish of council, whatever they want to do relative to the water fund.
I mean, Attorney Stewart, correct me if I'm wrong, you would just require a creative ordinance. Fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay, yeah, and to be clear, I'm not looking to act on that, like on a whim, but I just had never even considered that and knew it was a regulated process because PUC is involved in some of it. So I wasn't sure if it's even on the table as a thought.
The pitfall, if you will, is again, PUC, City of Bethlehem. If you're going to create an ordinance, that ordinance only applies to city residents, not outside city residents.
Correct. I do understand that. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. I'm done.
Any other new business from members of council? All right, we're going to move on. Communication 6A.
November 10th, 2025, Memorandum and Proposed Resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. is Gilio seeks authorization to apply for a local share account grant for $1 million from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. Grant money would be for construction on West Broad Street.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. 6B.
November 12, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Lori Gilio, Grants Administrator for Community and Economic Development. Ms. Gilio seeks authorization to apply for a local share grant for $750,000 from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development. Grant money would be used for capital improvements to the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. 6C.
A November 11th, 2025 memorandum and proposed ordinance from Business Administrator Eric Evans. Mr. Evans recommends transferring $11,300,000 from revenue account 001A-308901 into expense account 0801-42083 in the non-utility capital fund, where it will be allocated into accounts that will fund capital needs in 2026 through 2029.
And ordinance 9L is on the agenda. I don't have any, moving on to reports, I don't have anything to report this evening. Mr. Evans?
No report, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 1702 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances titled Fees for the Enforcement of the Pennsylvania Uniform Construction Code, Act Number 45, 1999. Bill 45, 2025 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
This is on, I'm sorry, I was...
We are on 8A, Mr. Callahan.
8A. Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 1113 of the City of Bethlehem Codified Ordinances titled Food Code Regulation. Bill number 46, 2025 is sponsored by Ms. Wilhelm and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to new ordinances, 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the general fund budget for 2026. Bill number 47, 2025 is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Before we get into the votes, so I will recognize that the next couple are for the budgets for 2026. As is custom, we have first reading the second meeting of November. As I outlined earlier, we will have our last budget hearing on Thursday. We will accept amendments up until a week from today. And then we historically have the second reading at the second meeting in December. This gives adequate time for if there are any amendments, the will of council is to make amendments. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Attorney Stewart, we still have to advertise, right? So this still, we're still within, it's all procedural is what the summary of what I'm getting at. So tonight, even though there will still be time to amend the budget, should that be a wish of the individual member of council to introduce an amendment, and should the will of council be to make an amendment, this gives adequate time to have the first reading done. We check that box, and then Mr. Miller can move on with the rest of the process as we're required to do. So I just want to restate that. And this is for my deputy on council, how it's historically been handled. Any discussion on 9A? Mr. Callahan?
I'm going to be voting no until we find the funds for the four additional firefighters.
Understood.
Nay, I'm also going to vote no because I'm going to be doing an amendment for the firefighters and it needs to come from the general fund.
Understood. Any other discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 5-2. 9B.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the waterfront budget for 2026. Bill number 48, 2025 is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion?
Councilor?
Making a comment I don't think is necessary, but I'm voting aye on all of these to move through procedurally and am willing to consider amendments and may have some to propose myself as well.
Understood. And you'll have your opportunity as I
Yes.
Any other discussion? Call the roll, please.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9C.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the sewer fund budget for 2026. Bill number 49, 2025, sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9D.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Golf Course Enterprise Fund budget for 2026. Bill number 50, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9E.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Liquid Fuels Fund budget for 2026. Bill number 51, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9F.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem and Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the 2026 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 52, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9G.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the 2026 capital budget for water utilities. Bill number 53, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9H.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the 2026 capital budget for sewer utilities. Bill number 54, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9I.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Community Development Block Grant Budget for 2026. Bill number 55, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9.
J.
9J.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, adopting the Stormwater Fund Budget for 2026. Bill number 56, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne.
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9K.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, fixing the tax rate for all city purposes for the year 2026. Bill number 57, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leung?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 9L.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2025. Bill number 58, 2025, was sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 5-2. 9M.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 112 of the codified ordinances entitled Campaign Finance Reports. Bill number 59, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
So before we begin discussion, I've circulated a memo of an additional amendment I'd like to propose tonight on the floor to, in addition to the other amendments which we're going to vote on, I'll make a motion to add a Section 4 effective date to the current ordinance. And Section 4 effective date will then read, this ordinance shall take effect as of February 2nd, 2026. If there's a second, we'll have discussion and I'll explain further. So that's the motion on the floor.
I'll second.
Second by Councilwoman Leone. We're on discussion. So the effective date, I think, just brings us in line with the reporting period. So depending on when this ordinance would go into effect, campaign finance reports aren't due until the beginning of the following year. So having the effective date be at the end of the 2025 reporting period is just for consistency and continuity. So if someone goes at any time in the future to look for a 2025 campaign finance report for any of us, they'll all be there for the calendar year. So it just essentially concludes our current practice that ends after the last reports are due for 2025. That is the reason behind this amendment. So any other discussion on the amendment? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. The amendment passes 7-0. So we still have to vote on the whole package of amendments. I spoke on it during committee of the whole. Essentially, this comes from the county now posts everything online. I had went over to the computer, shared that. I think it's a little duplicative. It is duplicative of what we're having our clerks do. Statement of financial interest will still be done as is required. And then I'll work with the clerks, as we've previously discussed. Councilman Wilhelm had volunteered to kind of help out with the language. We'll post just a link to the county website. So should in calendar year 2026 or any time in the future anyone look for those reports, we'll just, instead of uploading them, we'll have one link where people can find them. So the information is still accessible. It just frees up our clerk's office with one less task. Any discussion on that? Councilwoman?
I was going to reiterate and confirm that we will clearly state on our website where folks can find the information, and reiterate my willingness and interest in helping do so. Just make sure it's seamless and easy to understand for the general public.
It has not been lost upon me. Thank you, Councilman. Any other discussion? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the city requests a statewide local share assessment grant to the Commonwealth Financing Authority. Be it further resolved that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute all agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
And Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the city requests a statewide local share assessment grant through the Commonwealth Financing Authority. Be it further resolved that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute all agreements and documents as are deemed to be necessary and are related thereto. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safely, everyone. Hope you have a safe and joyful Thanksgiving.